If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So the first story that we had was a poll from Convention of States and Trafalgar Group showing that independent Republican voters are furious over the raid on Trump and are heavily motivated now to actually come out and vote in the midterms. You got to wonder with news like that, if the FBI was just trying to make sure Republicans won, because 3 months out from a midterm election, they raid the former president. That's going to light up independents and Republicans like crazy. But then as we're getting the show ready, There was a breaking story actually from a couple hours ago from Penn Live. The FBI has subpoenaed several PA Republican lawmakers.
Here we go.
This is crazy expansion. I don't know what it is they're trying to do, what they're trying to get, but I wonder if this might turn into some kind of October surprise where they do all of these things now. Sure, it riles up Republicans, but then come October, they issue some criminal indictments on a bunch of individuals and say, aha, look, in an attempt to smear Republicans. I don't know for sure. So we'll talk about that. And then we got some ridiculous stories. I guess Rosita has been canceled, Sesame Street or whatever character, for being racist. So we'll talk about that and censorship. Before we get started, my friends, head over to timcast.com and become a member to support our work. And you will get access to exclusive uncensored shows from Timcast IRL. We're going to have one up for you tonight at 11 p.m. We do that Monday through Thursday. And our new show, Tales from the Inverted World. Plus, I believe the Cast Castle vlog is obviously delayed again because we're trying to really relaunch things and make something special for y'all. So that'll be a new show coming out probably next week. But we want to make sure we do it right when we start. And then we're going to have new episodes every week. Plus, we've got a couple documentaries in the works. It's going to be really awesome. We have the gun control documentary is currently underway. We are I shouldn't say too much yet, but we're working with someone. You guys probably already figured out what we're doing. So we'll mention that when we can. So smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Joining us today to talk about this and so much more is Naomi Wolf.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Do you want to introduce yourself for those who aren't familiar with you?
Sure. I'm Naomi Wolf. I'm the author of 8 nonfiction books, usually about women's issues or civil liberties. They were all bestsellers, I'm glad to say. I have a new book out called The End of... I'm sorry, that was my last book. My new book is called, which is a sequel to it, is called The Bodies of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19, and the War Against the Human. I am the mother of 2 and a stepmom of 2, wife of a veteran, and I'm also CEO of a tech company called DailyClout.io, a civic tech company.
Cool.
Yeah, and its goal is to make democracy easier for everyone to use.
I know a lot of people were already chatting. They're familiar with you mostly through feminism and through, you know, past instances where you've done interviews. And I'm sure many people, you know, their attitude is like, you know, oh man, this is going to be a debate or something. But and maybe. But what I think is fascinating is that you came out heavily against vaccine mandates and restrictions. You've been canceled and banned over these stances, which I think most of the people who watch this show probably agree with you on. So I appreciate you coming. I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation.
Thank you. Well, I'm so grateful to have it.
Right on. We also have Hannah Claire Brimelow joining us.
Hi, I'm Hannah Claire. I'm a writer for TimCast.com.
Hi, everyone. Ian Crossland. What's up?
Sorry, I guess I need a longer intro. I don't know.
There you go.
Yeah. You got to have you got to promote something when you come on the show. That's what people like.
Okay. Encourage you all to visit timcast.com. It's a really great news site.
That's fantastic.
I personally love it.
Well, I'm not going to, I'll promote dailyclout.io because we were talking about it before the show. It sounds pretty fascinating that you're going to make it easier for people to read and vote and talk about bills before they go to Congress.
Yeah.
Or that. I love that. So maybe get that into that later. But hi, everyone. I'm here to stay. Bye.
Ian is here for sure. And I am as well in the corner. I'm delighted to have Naomi. I'm excited to learn about what all we have in common. I think it will surprise all of us.
Thank you.
I think it's supposed to thunderstorm too.
That'll be fun.
Just so that, you know, hopefully anybody who works here is listening just in case.
Yeah.
So,
I'll put out a word.
Yeah. You know, because the power flickers and stuff. This is what happens when you live in the middle of
nowhere.
Yeah.
Let's jump into this first story. So as we're getting ready to put the show together, I caught this story. It was published just around 6 p.m. FBI delivers subpoenas to several PA Republican lawmakers, sources say. At least some of the individuals receiving subpoenas were told they were not targets of an investigation, according to at least six sources reached by Penn Live, but that they may have information of interest to the FBI. All of the sources have been briefed on the investigative moves in some way, but demanded anonymity in order to discuss them. The information being requested centered around U.S. Rep. Scott Perry and the effort to seek alternate electors as part of former President Donald Trump's efforts to remain in office after the 2020 election, several sources say. Said, the Washington Post on Wednesday, citing a source familiar with the probe, also reported that Perry's cell phone was seized Tuesday as part of the Justice Department's criminal investigation into the use of fake electors to try to overturn President Biden's victory. The Post source also spoke on the condition of anonymity. Spokespersons for the Pennsylvania House and Senate Republican leaders did not confirm whether any of their caucus members received a subpoena. Quote, I am unaware of any FBI presence in the Capitol or Leader Benninghoff's office yesterday. To the extent House members or my staff may have been contacted by the FBI, we would not comment on a potential or ongoing investigation. So there's a few simple points to make. And the first one I'm going to say is, I don't trust the FBI. Mm. I don't trust the DOJ. I don't trust the federal government. That being said, they're trying to claim that by having alternate electors, it's some kind of fraud. But if you go back to, I think it was 1968, correct me if I'm wrong, during it was Nixon and Kennedy. Was it 68? Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. You want to fact check me? There was a dispute in Hawaii. And Hawaii sent an alternate slate of electors, which Nixon, as the vice president, decided to use even though they weren't the certified electors.
Was it 1960?
Was it 60?
Nixon-Kennedy, yeah.
And Nixon, okay, so 60. Yeah, why did I say 68? Now what happens is you have this contentious legal battle in 2020. A bunch of Republicans, you know, the electors for the Republican side, which were not the certified electors for the state, did fill out these forms and send them in anyway. Now they're acting as though that was a criminal action or fraud or something. Perhaps they're going to use that as a means to stop Donald Trump from being able to run again. Or it's just part of the bigger, just go after Trump by all means or whatever.
Do you think this is similar to the Nevada, they call them fake electors, but alternate electors that were subpoenaed by the January 6th committee?
Yeah, it's all the same thing.
This is so interesting to me because it just looks like the media is writing history in real time. Like they want us to believe this is insane. It's never happened before, but it happened in 1960. There's nothing crazy about this. They're just making it up as they go along.
I do think the whole thing's crazy.
It is a little weird. Yeah.
So we had, I think it was 46 states or something that were involved in a lawsuit. Do you remember this? In 2020, Texas filed a lawsuit against, I think, Pennsylvania, maybe Pennsylvania. And then it expanded into like 46 states where you had like 24 suing 20, you know, suing these, like it was Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And then you had the other 22 in defense of those states.
Oh, wow.
And the Supreme Court, which has original jurisdiction to hear lawsuits between states, rejected it. They said no outright. So we never got resolution on these arguments. And this is leading now. We're heading to the point where the FBI has raided the home of the former president.
Right.
Told them their lawyer could not be present while they were enacting the search, broke the padlock off the room that they requested be there. God. I got an interesting email earlier, and I'll call it unconfirmed. In my morning segment, I was talking about, there's a report from Ken, I think it's Ken Delaney, and I could be wrong. He was on NBC, and he said, a few months ago, the FBI requested a padlock be placed on this room at Mar-a-Lago, which had these documents. They then went in and broke the padlock they requested. That's a simple way to put it if you think the FBI is one guy. Mm-hmm. But the FBI is not one guy. It's not a monolith.
Right.
So I got contacted by someone alleging that they were a former FBI agent. And they said, you know, they didn't tell me anything crazy. They just said, you're right. The FBI is a bunch of different offices. It's not monolithic. There is leadership, but often there, you know, there's like senior leadership that will take actions in one direction without one other office knowing. So my assessment was one group of on the board, on the level FBI agents say, okay, we know what you got here. It's fine. Just padlock it in case. This other group of agents gets a warrant signed off by an Epstein judge, a former Epstein defense attorney.
So questionable.
Yeah.
And then goes in and smashes the padlock and seizes documents or something like that, allegedly. Yeah. So Banana Republic, Collapse of the United States, I'll throw it to my panel.
My one of the most wild things I read coming out of all of that was Andrew Cuomo, who's like, the DOJ should really explain what's going on. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's going to start to look like the January 6th committee is not credible. Mm-hmm. Andrew Cuomo, the disgraced ex-governor of New York. I mean, if anyone really can recognize when something is corrupt, mm-hmm. I would assume someone who has been asked to leave office would be a good judge of character there.
Yeah. I mean, should I just jump right in? And
yeah, what do you think? For it, yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I was a political consultant to the vice president in 2000, also a contested election outcome in which no one was criminalized for asking questions about the outcome. I mean, this is really haunting me. But also, I advised the Clinton reelection campaign. And what I learned as a political consultant is to read events backwards. In other words, what's happening? Like, what's the outcome? Like, let's leave the story alone, because what you learn as a consultant is that at that level, the guys in the room choose the outcome, and then they go to the message guys down the hall and ask the message guys to come up with a story to get the American people to accept the outcome, the goal. And often the story has nothing to do with the goal. So I'd encourage you almost like, don't pay that much attention to what you're being told about the reasons that lawmakers who are Republican are being subpoenaed, or that the President of the United States has, you know, 30 people bursting into his private home and seizing his materials. And look at everyone else. Project Veritas is related to this. Steve Bannon having a SWAT team going into his private home is related to this. I mean, you know, leaving the stories aside, the overall chessboard is the criminalization of being a Republican. Mm-hmm. You know, and
did you ever think you'd say that?
I mean, yeah, I wrote this book, The End of America, in 2008, warning that we were hurtling toward, you know, that there are 10 steps tyrants always take to close down an open society, and that step 10 is where we're at now. I didn't know we'd get here so fast. I thought we'd headed off at the pass because we're, you know, able to cherish our republic, but clearly we're not doing that. But yeah, so the outcome is, you're exactly right to worry about timing, Tim, because, you know, these are dangerous months. And I've been saying this for months, you know, leading up to these months. What are we in now? August, September, October, November.
It's going to get crazy.
It's going to get crazy. And the goal is to have things so unstable, so scary, chilling everywhere, you know, shocking images, people's homes being broken open, people being led away in handcuffs, Peter Navarro in leg chains, right? This is all part of the drama, the spectacle of what other countries like Russia and China understand is tenderizing an enemy. So the American people are being tenderized right now. And the goal is to completely incapacitate the Republican leadership, to scare journalists and critics like you and me, because that's part of it. And I'll just say me, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And also to tie up the leadership like Bannon and Trump in so many legal problems and hassles that they are not able to pose a threat to the outcomes that are already foreordained. And Alex Jones, absolutely.
He's not, you know, Jones was so massively influential in 2014, 15, 16. They found a way to get him off all these platforms. And Alex Jones, for all the criticisms that I think he deserves, he got wiped off of the internet back to back all at the same time.
Right.
You know, so maybe you can call it a cascade effect, but I think powerful interests were like, this is a guy who's rallying people mm-hmm. with a massive platform. This can't be allowed.
Right.
I guess my question for you, when you wrote the book in 2008, did you think it was going to be Republicans who would turn out to be the victims of this?
That's such a painful question. I mean,
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Right. At the time, it was Republicans doing the bad things.
It was Mitt Romney and like John McCain.
Oh, no, worse. It was Bush. Dick Cheney. I mean, it was Guantanamo. It was, you know, the global war on terror. That was the terrifying internal and external threat invocation. That's step one of the 10 steps to fascism. Now it's a virus. But
to be fair, Liz Cheney's still here, and she's leading the charge.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, thank goodness.
Right.
Yeah. Wyoming is so happy.
Yeah.
I guess what I said then, I mean, I remember this. My people are so dumb.
Who are your people in this?
The former liberal. I mean, I'm a liberal by, you know, classical liberal all my life, registered Democrat all my life. My former people, my former tribe of the left are very short-sighted, and they're cheering about, you know, Project Veritas is in trouble, Donald Trump is in trouble. It's like cheering the rope that is going to hang them metaphorically, you know, and they're not reading history. But the reason I say this is that in 2008, I remember everyone around me going, we just need to get Obama in and then there will be no more tyranny. And I'm like, are you insane? Are you insane? These things of, you know, shutting down democracies, the left and the right both do it. Mm-hmm. And during the Obama years, I was one of like five people on the left, including Glenn Greenwald, who were like, you know what? He's droning Americans. Mm-hmm. Guantanamo's still open. It's growing. You know, all of these promises are not being kept. So I didn't expect it would be Republicans being hunted, but I'm not surprised that that has come about.
I was fairly young in 2008. I voted for Obama and, I was skeptical, but I kept hearing from all these people saying like, this guy's different. He's not the same part of the machine. He's an outsider. And you know, he came from community organizing and I was like, I don't know, sure, whatever. I'll vote for the guy. And then one of the first things he did was he blew up some kids.
Right.
I think it was like literally within a few days, a drone strike in Pakistan hit a village. And then I was like, wait a minute, we were protesting the war and this guy just did this thing. Then when 2012 came around, I was just like, yeah, right. You're not going to get me to vote for this guy again. And now we've got, I love bringing it up because of how important it is, the extrajudicial assassinations carried out by the Obama administration. This is why I was so adamantly opposed to Joe Biden. Mm. I ended up voting for Trump. I didn't vote for him in 2016, but in 2020, I was like, you're not giving me Biden, you know, Obama 2.0 or whatever. And it ended up happening. So,
well, you've had quite a journey. I mean, how do people, your former friends, feel about that?
Former friends.
Right?
Mm-hmm. You know? Well, interestingly, my real friends that I mostly grew up with, only a few of them have lost their minds.
Hmm.
But there have been some weird circumstances. But surprisingly, like, I have a friend who's deeply woke, still a really good friend. And just like, we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. And it comes up sometimes, and you can feel tensions rising, and then it's just like, let's talk about horror movies.
Yeah, it's...
But I'm glad that can happen.
Yeah.
But I do think, you know, for someone like this, a friend of mine, they're not overtly political. It's, you know, you're mentioning your former liberal, you know, associates or cohorts or whatever. They're just not paying attention and they're passively absorbing what they're being told and assuming it's true.
Yeah. I
was just gonna say, I feel like with my friends, liberal or even there are conservatives like this too, there are, a lot of them aren't inherently political and there are a couple issues that matter to them. Mm-hmm. And so they'll buy the whole ticket even though they can't see, like you're saying, that these are ultimately interwoven issues. Mm-hmm. They can't see what their decisions will lead to in the domino effect.
I got to just jump right to abortion, right? Yeah. The Democrats recently tried to pass a bill that would allow abortion up to 9 months.
Oh, God.
It was cleverly worded that in the instance where the mother's health was in jeopardy, an abortion could be carried out post viability.
Right.
And so my response, we had a progressive on, was very simple. Like, okay, I hear you. If the baby is viable, why abort it?
Yeah.
Why not just deliver it?
Did this person actually support that bill?
And beyond. This individual told us it's the woman's choice no matter what up to the point of birth.
Yeah.
And my position,
insane.
I grew up in Chicago. I grew up with a liberal family, and we were always like, yeah, maybe like the first trimester pre-viability, we understand. After that, you're in dangerous territory. Now the left is just wholesale, like, whenever, whatever.
I think Larry Elder was on the show and saying that it's the health of the mother as well. So it could be like if she's going to suffer depression, then maybe she can terminate an 8.5-month-old fetus.
God.
It's not just about the life of the mother. It's about the health of the mother, which is like vague.
But just to bring it up, you know, you as I guess you consider yourself former liberal. You're still liberal.
No, I'm a classical liberal. Me and three other people. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Or politically homeless is, you know,
yes,
one way.
Totally a political refugee. Absolutely.
But so you're obviously not in favor of abortion up to 9 months.
No, I am not.
It's crazy what the left has become they would call us right wing.
For raising questions about that.
It's crazy.
It's insane. I mean, what really scares me about this is the kind, what I'm seeing on the left is this kind of entrainment almost intellectually where if the thing is support Ukraine, you can't ask any questions about, you know, Ukraine's abusiveness to the rule of law. If the thing is abortion and under any circumstances, no matter how crazy the bill is, no matter how extreme, how sadistic, how abusive, how I would say anti-woman and anti-baby it is to, you know, extend the abortion capability into the second month, into the, I'm sorry, second trimester, third trimester. If that's the thing, it just seems to be plugged into people's minds on the right, and they just kind of follow like lemmings, like with no critical thinking. They can't demur. Right. And there are a lot of interesting reasons for that, but I do think on the left, critical debate is no longer possible, and it's so important to distinguish themselves from like Trump lovers or whatever they call anyone who disagrees with them.
Yeah.
And that's really scary to me, because if you look at history, it's people in that mind state that go along with genocide, and look mm-hmm. what they went along with and go along with. The former left, people I know and love who would never discriminate against a gay couple or a lesbian couple, never discriminate on the basis of race, embraced a discrimination society that was right. just like a Jim Crow two-tier discrimination society.
When did you start?
I couldn't walk into a building in New York City because I'm not vaccinated.
Mm.
And people I know and love who are right on were completely fine with treating unvaccinated people legally and in every other way as others who were less than.
Oh yeah, like plague rats or something. I've heard that before.
But to add to your point, we had in Dearborn, Michigan, the non-POC and the POC digital cafes, University of Michigan. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, they have...
What?
Yeah, have you seen...
No.
That? Yeah,
that's illegal.
Yes, it is. Yeah, there was a... who was it? Was it... Michael Seifert just the other day
yeah.
mentioning Yelp, I think he said, mm-hmm. yeah. that was offering a grant based on race?
Yeah.
I could be
yeah.
wrong.
I don't know.
Yeah. But like, it's a
super illegal, totally illegal.
There were African American students at NYU that were asking for their own dorm. That's segregation. Yeah. But they were like, no, it's better for us.
Yep. So you've been in politics way longer than I have. When did you start noticing this shift happening and the left losing their minds?
That's tough. I mean, I guess in the last 4 or 5 years, I would see positions that were out there on the left, and I would just dismiss them because I thought that's nonsense. No one I know really would believe that or do that. The first time I remember hearing the phrase dead white men and that culture created by dead white men, or the phrase toxic masculinity, I would just think, well, that's ridiculous. Those are ridiculous concepts. You know, why... How can you possibly take seriously dismissing great works of art, masterpieces, our whole cultural heritage because of the gender and race of the person who did it? That's racism and that's sexism, obviously. And it's also self-destructive. And as a mom of a man and a stepmom of a 11-year-old future man, I really, you know, object to this phrase toxic masculinity or nonsensical statements about like male sexuality, heterosexuality being innately, you know, abusive or exploitive. Those are very damaging things to say to young men and boys. And they're also just destructive because it doesn't have to be that way. And it, you know, where's love and where's, you know, this ideal of people finding each other? If they happen to be heterosexual, that shouldn't be any, you know, less valid than any other sexuality that people want to be. But I didn't take those seriously. But once, like, victory's so bad for us on the left. It's so toxic for us to win. Because once we won, you know, the presidency and the House, it was like a scary Marxist flood mm-hmm. that was like latent and dormant, very much influenced by the CCP. I am convinced, and the World Economic Forum and other bad actors, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. But this latent Marxist, Stalinist, aggressive, violent, coercive flood of nonsense just erupted, and now people on the left have no qualms about being as coercive and oppressive as they want to be.
I like posting on. I got a lot of Occupy Wall Street people who follow me, and I like posting on. They'll post things like Trump has been raided by the feds. They'll laugh with smiley faces, and I'll be like, my response to them is always, I'm glad that you finally came around to supporting the feds and the federal government.
Right?
It took you a long time to realize they were the good guys.
Absolutely.
And then their response is like, well, I mean,
it's different. No.
Hey, keep cheering them on, man. Keep cheering them on, because we know where this goes.
When did they stop having like the Kantian imperative of it has to be consistent? If you don't want them to shut you down and censor you, you can't censor Project Veritas. You can't. Right. If you don't want them to come for your president, you can't go for their president. Like, why don't they see that?
Would you say that they feel like they have the moral high ground? That
totally.
The things that Project Veritas are doing, while they may be structurally similar, you know, it's another form of censorship to oppress them, it's worth oppressing because they are promoting the wrong things.
Well, you're 1,000% right. And it's, again, super scary because on the left, there's been this mission creep of language, mm-hmm. increasing, you know what I'm going to say, right?
Oh, I know it.
Yeah, increasingly identifying thoughts as violence or speech as incitement, such that and January 6th was a big part of this, like, such that I think the left really feels like the people who disagree with them are so dangerous and all white supremacist and, mm-hmm. you know, the things they think are so innately violent.
Even well, we if have they to cut disagree, it off before have, the thought exactly. even gets there. We can't expose any of this material to anyone right. because they might indoctrinate someone else, aka get them to think about an issue in a way that we don't believe in.
But absolutely. Like, sorry.
Oh, is the fear that if Trump becomes president, he's going to make America like a meritocracy? Is he's going to make it totalitarian? Because they're using the FBI to kick down doors right now. Like, right. what are they afraid is going to happen? Hmm.
I mean,
they're afraid someone's going to kick their door down.
Yeah, they're afraid.
We're both from New York. We both know.
It's the Northeast over here.
Right, right. So truly the left believes, and I used to believe a lot of this. I really did, because they lie to us. Legacy media lies to us, and liberal media lies to us. I'm not saying the right is perfect or doesn't distort, but these are the kinds of things the left truly believes, that if Trump were elected or there was another right-wing or conservative president, it would be like Margaret Atwood's
Handmaid's Tale
yeah. for women.
The one reference right. we can't get over as a society.
Right? Harry Potter.
Right? Yeah, And that every conservative is racist, every conservative is homophobic, and that it would be kind of a Bible-based reactionary America in which religious minorities would be quashed, in which there would be no freedom to love. There would be a fossil fuel orgy leading to the demise of the planet in a matter of weeks. Is this fair? I mean, is there more you want to add? That women would be forced to conceive and raise children, you know, that they didn't want or that they couldn't take care of. And, you know, there's some truth to these concerns, but in a functioning civil society, you talk these things out and you create policies that, you know, meet in the middle.
I don't believe them. Because in any, like, they may actually have broken worldviews that I can believe, but this idea that the right is simultaneously advancing fascism while trying to give you guns makes no sense. Like, quick, everybody have as any gun. I argued that the Second Amendment does cover nuclear weapons. Not that it should cover nuclear weapons.
Whoa.
But during the time of the Founding Fathers, you could have a privateer, you could have a frigate, you could have grapeshot, you could have full, you know, a plethora of cannons, the same armaments the government had. That never changed. So my point was, perhaps people would agree you should not allow this and we would need to make that amendment. They all got really angry that I'd bring it up. My point here
why
is...
Why were they angry, if you don't mind my asking?
Well, they called me like a wingnut arguing that people should have nuclear
people
weapons.
People misinterpreted.
Because it sounds terrifying.
They didn't misinterpret it. Media Matters cut my quote that
people,
off.
You said people should have nuclear weapons according to the Second Amendment. They thought he meant, I think, morally right. people should have right. nuclear weapons. Where he was saying, no, legally, according to the rule right now, people should be able
to... But just right. my point right now is... I'll tell you a story. I was in Berkeley during the battle for Berkeley when all the Antifa were fighting the Trump supporters. And I actually got to talk to an Antifa guy after everything was calming down, because I was just standing there, like, you know. And this guy said, I asked this Antifa guy, like, what happened? Mm-hmm. And he said, they came up and they punched my friend. And then we started talking, and he told me that he brought a knife, that he was going to defend himself. And then he said, and I asked him why, and he said, because these are fascists, man. They want to kill people. Mm-hmm. And I said, you think all of those people in that park are fascists right there? And he's like, yeah, dude, they're all fascists. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you think that those people in that park want to defend the Second Amendment? And he was like, well, yeah, of course, the right always talking about guns. And I was like, do you think that they would then care if you had guns? Like, no. I'm like, so you think they're fascists, but they want you to have guns.
Right.
And he was like, And I'm like, yeah, I don't get your logic. There's no logic there. It's right. just tribalism.
Right. It is. But also a horrible thing has happened in the last 10 or 15 years in America in which these two groups never get to talk to each other. And I think social media has really escalated that because the algorithm makes sure that you only, you know,
you're fed further and further to one side of the spectrum exactly or the other. Right.
There is a way, you can see a YouTube video with someone you don't agree with. Back in the day, you could make a video response, and we had incredible conversations in 2007. Google's taken away the video response mechanic for oddly, but
I want to respond. I mean, the meme is that Ben Shapiro is screaming, "Debate me!" Like people on the right are adamantly saying, come have the conversation. I mean, we had Larry Elder on this show, and he was talking about how he's invited all of these people, and they won't come and talk to him.
We talked about this on the way up, Tim. I run into this as an editor of Daily Cloud, and it breaks my heart. We on the left, or we liberals, I'll say, we're supposed to be the ones who believe in free speech. Remember the free speech movement in Berkeley? Yep. That was led by the left. Mario Savio was on the left. We're supposed to believe in not believe in censorship. Allen Ginsberg, you know, like Lady Chatterley's Lover, these are liberals. But now people will send me right-leaning op-eds, and I'll reach out to all of my remaining liberal contacts or just, you know, put out the word. We go to NARAL and say, will you please tell us, you know, why this pro-life op-ed is wrong, write your own op-ed, and they won't do it. Or we'll go to the Green advocates and say, tell us why this pro-fossil fuel op-ed is wrong, and they won't do it. They'll just say, you shouldn't run that material. I'm not going to appear in a document where other people who hold these views appear.
I'll give a shout-out to Jacobin. Are you familiar with Jacobin magazine?
I am.
They're pro-free speech.
Good for them.
I've consistently seen articles from them where they say outright we should not tolerate the censorship and things like that. And I'm like, hey, man, look, I don't got to agree with the socialist. If we agree on respecting each other's right to speak, then I'll take what I can get. Right now, you've got, following the FBI raids, a bunch of MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene. I guess she's selling merch. I'm not entirely sure, but it says, like, defund the FBI. Mm-hmm. Crowder has called for something similar. The Washington Post ran a story saying the right now wants to defund law enforcement. And leftists are laughing. And I'm like, bro, this was your position. Shouldn't you be cheering? Mm-hmm. Shouldn't you be like, we're winning?
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened? What happened is that their opponents are getting the punishment. Yeah. And now they enjoy it.
Another problem is that, like, censorship's important in the right context. You don't want to allow people to make imminent threats of violence. It's illegal under the First Amendment.
It's already illegal.
Yeah, it's illegal as a form of censorship.
Right.
And pictures of children.
Yeah, stuff like that. You censor that stuff.
You need censors.
But corporations now are in control of the public square with Alphabet and Meta and things like that, where they can more or less terminate your access to the masses. Mm-hmm. The law has yet to catch up to that. I don't think that private companies should be overriding the First Amendment in the United States. Mm-hmm. So I advocate that we free the software code of large social networks so that other people can spin up networks that can interoperate with them, and it will free
seize the means of production.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Free the means of production.
Similar. Let's jump to this story here. This is the story we were originally going to lead with. This is from conventionofstates.com. Large majority of independents, Republicans, believe Trump's political enemies are behind the FBI raid and are now more likely to vote in 2022 midterms. This is from Trafalgar Group in the Convention of States. They say 83% of Republicans, 72% of independents now more likely to vote. I mean, that's really good news if you want Republicans to win.
It's the best get out the vote effort the government's ever had.
Right. But and so there's a few points to be made. The first thing I want to say is there's no guarantee Republicans winning does anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. Granted, seeing more like America First style politicians who are just like more like Ron Paul, like just no, we're send government authority and things like that, I can accept as it's better, in my opinion, that many of these candidates win than the Democrats retain control and steamroll through things. But I have to wonder, was the FBI, if there's no political motivation in what the FBI is doing, then they don't care that this is riling up independent voters and Republican voters. Unless there is political motivation, which I think most people believe there is. So my assumption now is October surprise, that in about 2.5 months, these raids and subpoenas, the reason they're doing it now is so they can have the filings done, they can have the judges' signatures, and then come the end of October, it's bam, criminal indictment. Accusation. The entirety of the corporate press will be dominated with Republican arrested, so they don't lose the midterms. How else do they expect, with massive inflation, with horrible gas prices? I know they've come down quite a bit, bravo, but they're still really high. The misery index is so high, and the historical trends, Democrats should get wiped out in the midterms. unless they can pull some insane October surprise and make a bunch of arrests. Maybe, maybe not, but that's kind of what it feels like to me here, huh?
I feel like I'd go one step further to say the ultimate goal to what you're talking about before was they want to try and prevent Trump from running again. Right. And if they destroy the credibility of anyone who is kind of positioned as an ally to him, as someone who has supported him, not just like he's a bad guy, we don't like it, but he's literally on trial, he's in jail. They're hoping to win enough support to make it seem like it's an absolute non-starter. We cannot elect Donald Trump. I don't think they have a better candidate. I don't think Joe Biden will be able to run again. So really what they're trying to do is knock the Republicans most likely chess piece off the table to try and get ahead of whatever's going to happen next, because they are in a weak position themselves.
Larry Elder said it has to be Kamala Harris.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
really, why?
Because Democrats are dependent upon the black vote, and that if they abandon Kamala Harris for someone else, it's going to be deeply hurtful to the black community.
She's not competent.
But that's Larry
Elder's
opinion.
She's deeply unpopular.
I don't know if I necessarily agree, but far be it for me to claim to know better than Larry Elder.
I thought Cortez, I mean, it's almost like, is she actually going to run for president? That'd be cool.
I hope
At
she
least
does.
That'd be someone to listen.
That debate.
I think she listens.
We talked
to
about
people.
It before, a Trump AOC debate.
Yes.
Great.
So I got a couple angry emails from people. They're like, "How dare you say you would like to see AOC run for president?" I'm like, "Yeah, I think it'd be hilarious.
I mean,
be fantastic.
That's way better than what the Democratic Governors Association is doing to their voters, right? They're pouring money into races to get the quote unquote most extreme candidate elected so they can theoretically beat them in the midterm.
But think about that. The Democrats have been funding, we know this, the MAGA candidates, the Trump supporting candidates, or they've been funding their messages.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So,
this is weird.
It was,
Why?
The idea is that Trump candidates cannot win in a general election.
Wow.
So when you put them in,
driving everything to the extremes.
There was, I mean,
but my point here is real quick. Consider that. Now consider what the FBI is doing. Seems to make a bit more sense. They fund a bunch of these ultra MAGA candidates. Then the FBI starts going after Trump and his inner circle to taint the well and poison these candidates. So when they make a criminal indictment of someone in the Trump circle or Trump himself,
right,
they can say the criminal man himself endorsed this candidate. Don't vote for him.
Right. Oh my God. Ugh. So ugly. I mean, there's also the possibility that if they funded MAGA candidates, which is like smarter than I am used to Democrats being, but they also would know if there's any dirty linen because they have to do opposition research,
right,
you know, and
they save it for October.
And they save it for October for sure. But I think it could be even worse. I think that there's an element of trying to provoke Republicans, especially Trump supporters. I think there are going to be very shocking images we're going to see, you know, with, and God forbid, I hope I'm wrong, and I have to be nonpartisan, so I'm saying this very carefully, but I think we're going to see images of, like, the president in handcuffs or the president right. In a perp walk or the president behind bars or some kind of highly iconic image. And I think that the goal is to provoke, and we're going to get, and I'm seeing it already, a lot of, like, social media, like, whipping people's emotions up, instigators, infiltrators, and violence. Mm-hmm. And that will be a justification for a crackdown, state of emergency. You can't vote in person. You have to vote by mail. And then, of course, we know the vulnerabilities with that.
Yeah, trust me to count your votes for you, you guys. Everyone, give me a piece of paper. I'll tell you what the,
Biden's
what the tally
on it.
Was.
What, yeah, I mean, that's the argument. I completely agree with Ian that we have a proprietary company. We have a company with proprietary software code in how our voting is handled. Right. It should be public.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I also think people should photograph their vote, and we've offered at Daily Clout, you can send it to us and we'll create a locked third party kind of platform where you can mirror your vote and at least there will be a record of it.
What are your thoughts on January 6th? A lot of them, huh?
I mean, that's a very difficult thing to answer, partly because speech about January 6th is being criminalized. I think I will just say that, you know, the rule of law is incredibly important, both, you know, to protect our institutions and also to protect the rights of people who are accused of crimes. And the other thing I will say is that very generally, America has a long history of infiltrators and provocateurs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I remember watching a video a long time ago. I was out of Canada where it was some leftist protest, and there were three guys that were wearing what was very obviously a uniform. Like, they were undercover cops, and they were like, this is what protesters wear, put on a hoodie, jeans, and boots. Mm-hmm. And then everyone's like, those three guys dressed the exact same and started throwing bottles.
Right.
You know, so we hear a lot of stories like that. There was that story out of, I think it was Minnesota, where a guy shows up and smashes out windows and then leaves. I don't know exactly what happened with that. But I guess the concern now is, you know, with Ray Epps, I'm sure you're familiar with the Ray Epps saga. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy on camera telling people to go in the building, and now the media is calling him a victim. So you got there was a report yesterday that armed protesters were going to show up to Mar-a-Lago, and everyone immediately says feds. Because no, the right doesn't protest. Mm-hmm. They almost never go outside. And
what? Well, they go outside, but not to protest.
Really? No, I mean for protests.
Really?
Yeah, so but it's obvious. If you live in a big city mm-hmm. where it's predominantly liberal, mm-hmm. it's really easy to walk outside and see other people who agree with you and march.
Right.
If you live in a rural area, you could be, you know, between 100 yards and 10 miles from the nearest person. Not easy to organize that protest. And then where do you protest? In cities, it's easy to walk from like town hall mm-hmm. to like the police station.
Yeah.
But if you live in a big unincorporated area, where are you going to protest?
There's like
one
stoplight.
You're going to drive to D.C.?
Right.
What we end up seeing is protests overwhelmingly tend to be left or liberal. Rarely are they right wing or conservative, though they do happen. Mm-hmm. So when you get people showing up armed and doing these right wing protests, people just kind of roll their eyes like, what is going on? You know
yeah, I mean? I mean, to be fair, there were a lot of real people really in D.C. to support the president.
Well,
That's their right to show up in D.C. to support the president.
I think, what was it, like 200,000 some odd people showed up to and then there was like 800 at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So they demonize every single person who was in D.C. to see Trump speak, conflating watching a man talk mm-hmm. with storming into a building.
That's the really scary
And I must add, they conflate the people who stormed in the building with those who were let in by
On the other side of the building, it was a huge city block, that building. And the people on one side were breaking stuff. The other people were being let in by police, and they threw them all in detention. No. We let those people out, man. It's time for a great pardon. I don't care any of them. Joe Biden, dealings in Ukraine. He's sending his son on the board of an energy company in Ukraine. Pardon him. I don't want, I'm done
Hunter
with
Biden.
I'm done with going after people right
Why?
Now. Because if we try and persecute each other, it's just going to be passing the football back and forth and back.
Ian, it's not persecution. It's justice. I mean, our system calls for a trial by jury, a trial by one's peers. People have to be accountable for what they've done.
We've supported the war machine for too long. We're all culpable.
Yeah, but Hunter Biden, look, I'll put it this way. The January 6th defendants who have been locked up in like solitary, that shouldn't be happening. I mean, they can be under house arrest, not going anywhere.
Did you see what Walk Away did at CPAC? They had a cage with someone listening to testimony the whole time.
It was Brandon
Straka. He's great.
You know, so I think he was actually convicted, you know.
Yeah. We've been villainous as Americans.
Yes,
for too
but look,
long.
Look. You can put Hunter Biden on trial. We don't got to throw him in solitary. You can put the January 6th rioters on trial. You don't got to put them in solitary. I would absolutely respect them being like, look, you guys were violent, okay? House arrest until your court date, and then you get charged based on the crime you committed. That's the reality of things. Hunter Biden, yeah, we want an investigation into what he was doing in Ukraine and in China. I want an investigation into what Joe Biden's relationship was and all of this, sharing phone numbers, sharing emails. I don't think we just say, you know, you're free to go, we're done. But I'll put it this way. I do agree, and I've stated before, when it comes to the January 6th defendants, a powerful move would be to pardon all of them as a sign of like, we are seeking to end.
But it's got to be nonpartisan. I wouldn't just pardon them. You got to pardon more than that.
I don't mean to be rude, but I so disagree with both of you about this. God, where do I start? I mean, so I'm a survivor of a very bad crime when I was a child. And the people who suffer most when the rule of law is degraded are women and children. And what I'm seeing right now with defund the police and this movement, which is crazy to defund the police or to let people, you know, commit a certain amount of shoplifting before they get arrested, as in Santa Monica, where I just was, or just the degradation of the rule of law, the rise of crime, is that it hurts women and children most. These, I don't want to like get drawn into details of January 6th, but I will say again that Kantian imperative, we have to be against violence. We have to be against people breaking the law, whether it's there, whether it's the, you know, mercenaries who are beating truckers in Canada. That's violence. That's against the rule of law. Whether it's people being locked in solitary confinement, that's against the Geneva Conventions. That's against the rule of law. Like, everywhere we need to restore and make consistent the rule of law, but rather than abandon it, I believe.
But isn't there just I understand Ian's point. I don't know if I would go so far as to be like Hunter Biden's free to go. Maybe I'm a little biased when I say the January 6th rioters or protesters, but the idea there is if we keep doing a tit for tat, it's going to escalate and keep escalating. Like right
now,
you
said the right thing, Tim. You said like there is a code of penalties for certain laws. It's very cut and dried. I mean, the law is a beautiful thing if you really look at it. You know, each person, not just there, but anywhere across the country, Antifa, everybody, you know, if they committed a crime, the crime will be in that state book of crimes, and there's a penal code, and they should, you know, be tried and sentenced fairly, or tried and acquitted fairly. It's the politicization that's so dangerous.
Why I want to pardon these people because, one, it acknowledges that they did commit a crime. Right now, no one's acknowledging that Biden committed a crime, but I can see in the position of power. James Clapper said, "We did not wittingly spy on Americans with the PRISM program. We did. He did. He and his department wittingly spied on Americans. He committed perjury. Pardon him." Acknowledge that he committed the crime and pardon him.
Right
now people are pretending like he didn't commit a crime. It's even worse.
But why not, investigate him and try him?
Because I don't want to hurt these people. I want to help the species.
What you're describing seems like a political prisoner swap to me. We're just going to keep trading back and forth. Like, oh, well, this is a Democrat who does something wrong. So here's a Republican. Occasionally the Green Party is going to be like, what do we do to, like, get someone? Like, at the end of the day, it doesn't seem as productive. It sounds nice, but I think ultimately you're right. Like, we have rule of law for a reason. We should indict people and investigate them and bring them to a fair trial. But just saying, well, like, we think maybe you did something, Hunter, but we can't prove it, but preemptively we'll pardon you so we can pardon these other people so later we can pardon him. Like, it just seems complicated and unproductive to me.
Jeez, I mean, the last 2 years have been horribly unproductive. It's like the United States is an abusive relationship beating each other, and there's a whole world out there that we're not paying attention to because they're too busy beating each other, and I'm tired of it.
So
I totally agree with you about that.
So I suppose
about
the issue...
the divisiveness, yeah, sorry.
You know, we all sit here, and I think... we've actually started paying attention, all of us, at some point, and we learned some interesting facts about what Joe Biden was doing. I see these memes from the left where they're like, Donald Trump committed 34 crimes or something like that, and it's like all made up. Like, Russiagate was fake, Ukraine Gate was fake, and they just make these stories up. These people are convinced they're seeking justice. Not all of them. Some of them are just tribal. But a lot of them are like, Trump committed crimes. He has to be held accountable. And it's like, what crimes? And they're like, hey, but he count documents.
Did you see that video, Luke Rutkowski reposted today, where it's like someone protesting outside of Trump Towers and they're like, we want him arrested for the provable crimes. They're like, oh, what provable crimes? And he's like, provable crime? I got to stop the interview right now, actually. And it's the most awkward. This is freaking hilarious.
Let me see. I'm going to try and find it.
Going down.
He
there it is.
Right,
that's
here?
The one, yeah.
This is really funny.
Wait. I always got to fix the audio.
Always the audio.
I always got to make sure the audio is going to the people who are actually watching the show.
I don't know what the context
is. Is this unprecedented to arrest a former president for not turning in documents?
Well, I don't know any other former president that had committed this many provable criminal acts.
But what are the provable criminal acts, I guess?
Oh, dear.
Provable criminal acts. Well... I'm done talking.
Is this unpleasant?
I'm done. Can I just say, on the left, I've had people do that, wave at me, like, I'm done, we're done, we're done. It's like, where did that come from? When did that become a thing? You could just say,
there's
I'm
weird,
done.
There's these mind viruses around. You'll hear people talking, right? And they'll say right after they say something, as if they're asking you if what they're saying is correct.
Wow.
It's like a cult, it's like a tribal cult recognition thing, like upspeak.
Right.
I hear Rogan talking about it sometimes.
I just did it.
Yeah. And sometimes if you ask someone something and then you make the statement, right? Like, you're really asking, am I right? That's a different thing. When you're just doing it to get people to agree with you, it's this weird insecurity thing. It started in like the last 2 years. Watch for it. It's amazing.
I want to play the game with this guy in this interview. I want to play too. So, Trump's provable crimes. I don't think there are any.
There are not.
I can criticize him because during his administration, the State Department was advertising his golf resorts or his resorts. And he did try to have, I believe the G7 at Trump Doral. Those were like things I was like, hey, whoa, man, you know. And then he backed away and he was like, well, I think I should do it. But, crimes? Spare me. The quid pro quo with Ukraine? Let's play a game. Should Joe Biden be arrested for his provable crimes? Okay, well, I want to be sincere and get the nuance and the context correct. So I should say there should be an investigation into Joe Biden based on probable cause available to the public. Notably, that I believe it was the Council on Foreign Relations meeting, he was speaking publicly and stated that he engaged in a quid pro quo with Ukraine, something that we were told was illegal. So considering he admitted that he said to the president of Ukraine, if you don't fire the prosecutor, you're not getting $1 billion. Okay, right there, impeached and or charged criminally. And that extends way to a whole bunch of other issues, like Hunter Biden was on the board of Burisma.
Yeah.
Is this absolute malfeasance where it wasn't just a quid pro quo? It was him protecting his son's business interests. But then, of course, you know, his son and he shared emails and a phone number.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden told the American people that he didn't know anything about his son's business dealings. And then we learned that actually there's a bunch of photos of him with his son's business partners. Right. And they actually do know each other. And that Hunter Biden was flown on Air Force 2 to China to negotiate a private equity deal. Oh, boy, the list goes on. All of these things that have not yet been investigated that we need to know about. And then the best part, Joe Biden engages in a quid pro quo with Ukraine, his son on the board of Burisma, and he says, you got to fire the prosecutor. And now as president, he is giving them billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound a little weird to anybody? So if I was standing there and I was like, we got to arrest a sitting president, and someone said, what crimes did he commit? I'd be like, oh, boy.
I mean,
let me line them up for you.
Yeah, the crimes, I mean, everyone's got to read The Laptop from Hell because that will shock you with the abundance of criminality that's thoroughly documented there. Of course, you know, he's never been tried and convicted. Everyone's innocent until proven guilty. But there's, as you say, massive, massive evidence of wrongdoing at a very huge scale. It's a huge national security problem, and this is what we really need to look at. Hunter Biden, and by extension his whole family, the Biden family kind of acts as a criminal conglomerate in terms of receiving funds collectively. He received millions of dollars from a high-level CCP-related alleged asset.
What, wasn't it like $5 million? I don't remember
the exact amount, but it was millions. And that doesn't happen without payback. And so now
I believe it was a forgivable loan.
Right, there you go.
I could be wrong.
The donation.
Right. But look at our country. Again, look backwards. Reason backwards. Our borders are open. Our children are being propagandized. Our cultural norms and history is being degraded. The two groups, as you were saying, Ian, are being set against each other. Social media is deplatforming critics of this dominant narrative that is destroying the country. Images like worship is targeted. People are being arrested for holding, you know, for convening their churches and synagogues. So the CCP has a huge role in all of this, and this is how they crush societies. This is in their playbook. I think it's a vast, you know, it is treason to accept money from, to aid and abet our enemies. And I also read the description of what impeachment is, because that's what we do at Daily Clout. And it takes a very low bar for impeachment. High crimes and misdemeanors is a pretty low bar. So in every way, this is, you know, the debt that the Bidens have to China is devastating our country. And it is much more serious than the kinds of things that people have raised in the past about this the president who, you know, even though I didn't like him and didn't vote for him, had the FBI break into his house.
I'm glad you brought up the CCP. I think a lot about it. I don't like a boogeyman. I don't like creating the arch enemy that if we destroy them, we will win and everything will be okay. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. But they are basically provoking an extension of the opium wars. It's been going on for 120 years, and now they're running fentanyl through Mexico up into the country,
totally right.
Giving it back to the liberal economic order, what we did to them in the 1890s.
Wow.
We annihilated their populace with opium.
Ian, it's the liberal international economy.
The lie. The liberal international economy. We're headed towards a new international economy. It is not. Yeah. And it's going to be either, I don't know, I mean, it's kind of up to us how it happens.
Are you familiar with Thucydides' trap?
No.
It's a concept that we talk about here ad nauseum, where whenever a dominant economic power is about to be displaced by a rising economic power, typically, I shouldn't say whenever, typically war breaks out.
Oh, really?
So I think it was like within the past 500 years, there have been 16 instances where something like this has happened, and 12 of them resulted in major war.
Wow.
So the argument is that there are powerful interests in the United States trying to prevent war between the U.S. and China by crippling the United States and watching it collapse before a war can break out. So the idea is, if two powers reach a similar level and they start competing for who's going to dominate, they eventually just destabilize them. But if the dominant power is being hacked away at the base and then it just falls over, no war.
And told, look at Russia. Russia's bad. They're really bad. Yep, let's pay distracted. More attention to that.
That well, Russia propaganda was freakish in 2015 when it started.
Was?
That's such a good example of how the people we know, and I'm going to say me too, got sucked into untruths. I believed that Trump was a Russian asset because I read the New York Times and I watched CNN. I believed it. I believed that he was in bed with the Russians in a way that was traitorous to our country. And now I know that all of that was nonsense, that the dossier was nonsense. But I didn't know that at the
when
time.
When did you start? Because there are people who have the opportunity to look into this and choose not to because they're still part of, they still believe in the narrative so strongly. What changed for you?
Well, honestly, I'm always trying to be open-minded, and I didn't think that I was self-selecting out information that would have cut against it. But when you're reading the New York Times and watching CNN, there's such a repetition of the Washington Times is a cult paper. The Epoch Times is run by cult members. They just dismiss every conservative or independent or libertarian outlet. And so I was lucky. I married a libertarian. And
libertarianism saves lives. Who knew?
No, but I got exposed to where the lies were and other sources of information. And then I met a lot of the people producing the Epoch Times or producing these other news sources. And they're very credible journalists. I think libertarians and conservatives right now are doing, and you guys, people like you, are doing some of the only credible journalism remaining in America. But I guess that's just to say I thoroughly believed the lie that Trump was a Russian asset.
What was the moment that it changed?
That is a good question. I think that the legacy media had to recently, like a few months ago, step back. I don't remember the evidence that emerged, but they stepped back and said, oh, sorry, that was a lie. And the dossier wasn't true either.
Yeah. Whoopsie.
Yeah.
But a lot of people were entrenched in it for years, and it's crazy that they still won't let it go. They still think so. I think it's actually quite simple. There's a bureaucratic state. Civil servants who are appointed, who are not elected, have an agenda. They don't care who the president is. Donald Trump is an arrogant blowhard. So when he got elected, he just said, excuse me, no, and would not listen to what they insisted of him. And so they had to get him out of the way. That's it. I mean, you look at his administration so dramatically different from the previous administrations.
Right.
In my lifetime, I am 36. I've seen not nearly as much as most people, I think, in this. Well, I shouldn't say most because I don't know what the demographics are, but many people in this country who are older than me. I think majority of the country are older than me. Maybe not. I don't know. But anyway, my point is we get Obama promising hope and change. And he blows up kids. Huh. Great. Mm-hmm. Then you get Donald Trump. Yeah, he does bad stuff. Like missile strike in Syria, drone strikes, but no new wars. Pulling our troops out of the Middle East, pulling our troops out of Syria, trying to bring peace to the Middle East, the Abraham Accords, negotiating the deal in, I think it was it Kosovo, Serbia or something like that? Then you had Kim Jong-un in North Korea. He crossed into the DMZ with no security in a tremendous sign of peace and leadership. I mean, it was shocking to me that he did that.
Right.
They could have just snatched him up, taken the U.S. president, got one. They could have done a lot of stuff. They could have gripped his hand and held it tight and said, you're going to give us $1 million, aren't you? Or any nonsense like that. They just shook his hand and then he left. It was so dramatically different, his foreign policy, than I'd seen in such a long time, that it was very clearly in the way of the war machine and the establishment politics of this country.
Yeah. Well, I think you're completely right. And just each one of those, it's so embarrassing, but each one of those huge achievements, which I really didn't credit till pretty recently, was dismissed and derided by the legacy media.
I have to stress this every opportunity I get. When Donald Trump went to the DMZ, the demilitarized zone in the Koreas, and he met with Kim Jong-un, the media said he was ponying up to dictators and it was bad and he was causing problems. The president of the United States,
I remember that,
with no security detail, entered an enemy nation. The war with North Korea is still, there's still a war. The war did not end.
Right.
And Donald Trump crossed into North Korea, shook hands with Kim Jong-un, smiled and waved for photos, and then walked back. Yeah. And I was just watching this shocked, like, whoa, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, this is this oafish, blowhard reality TV guy just risked his life in a sign of peace.
Yeah.
And the media just crapped all over him for it. And I was just like, dude.
Or how about this one? We lefties really hated the war in Afghanistan. We really hated all those wars. That was the war machine.
Yep.
Embarrassing to acknowledge, President Trump actually brought our men and women home. You know, he scaled down the war machine. No one gave him credit for that on our side of it. I guess what I would say for the record, though, is as a survivor of sexual assault, the way he spoke about women was catastrophic, and I could not bring myself to vote for someone who was so dismissive about sexual abuse. It's that simple. Maybe that was short-sighted of me, but I kind of shouldn't have to. He should have had advisors saying, look, just talk, you know, apologize, you know, talk about it compassionately, say you've learned whatever, say you will try harder in the future to not be, you know, horribly abusive, or describe women in horribly abusive ways, or describe sexual assault.
This is when he said, this is when he was like, when you're famous, they let you, you know.
Yeah, but even his apology afterwards was very, very dismissive. And I think that was a very painful moment for, you know, the 33% of women who've been sexually abused before they were 18 and the 17% of men. And it was so hard for me personally to get over that.
This is what I think a lot of the really diehard Trump supporters need to pay attention to.
I agree.
There's a lot of them that you know, they'll say, like, don't care, it's funny, it's awesome. I'm like, I can appreciate you think it's funny, and it's no problem. Like, I hear Trump and I laugh. I do appreciate him being strong and aggressive. I'm just trying to convey, when I got into a car, I was going to Glenn Beck's studio, and the driver was a Mexican immigrant who came to America and became a citizen. And he said, yeah, man, I love Trump. I just wish he would stop saying that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Trump does get a lot of people by being aggressive. But he could make some moves that would retain that while also being more appealing to run-of-the-mill people who don't like that abrasive language.
I remember one of the criticisms he got all the time was that he wasn't presidential enough. He wasn't dignified enough. And while that is a little bit different from what the comments you're pointing out, I do think in some ways some Trump supporters doubled down. They like that he has these rough edges. Sure. And they like that he doesn't sound the way Obama sounded, and he doesn't sound the way career politician Biden sounded. I can agree that, like, his language around certain topics could be better. I would not like to be the advisor to try and corral Trump into changing his speech patterns. But I think Republican or conservative voters are willing to embrace flaws, or at least pick and choose flaws differently. I think some of the hang up with a lot of, especially young liberals that I know, is that it has to be absolute. Hmm. Like, there cannot be any sins. And that's ultimately completely unreasonable.
Well, who among you has no sin, right? Who are they going to find from their side of the aisle who has no sin to run for office? Right? I guess they don't have to worry about
it. They have to be hidden enough.
We have to not
let them surface.
Right.
I think the left has a tendency to just scream, lie to me, please. But what I mean by that is, they would prefer Hillary Clinton, who sounds correct. I mean, let's be real. They didn't want Hillary Clinton either. Everybody kind of groaned. But they would prefer Barack Obama's charming, big old smile, lying to your face and blown up kids.
Yep.
If it made you feel good. He says, plug your ears, kids. Just plug your ears. Everything's fine. Blow them up. Whereas Donald Trump is the opposite. I loved it. And one of the greatest moments in American presidential history was when he's outside, like he's outside the White House in the Rose Garden or whatever. And they ask him about Saudi Arabia, and he goes, we're going to sell a bunch of weapons to Saudi Arabia. It's going to be great for our economy. And then all the anti-war left was like, he just said it.
He said it.
He just completely admitted what they've never admitted, that we're just selling weapons to make money to bolster our economy. And Trump just said it. And I was laughing. The Intercept called him the most honest and dishonest president of our lifetime.
Wow.
Or of the United States or whatever. And I was just like, the funny thing is, Trump lies about things that are dumb. Like his ego stuff, like, no, I didn't say that. You can't say that about me. But then he just openly admits all this crazy stuff. Like, we're going to keep the troops in Syria for the oil. We like the oil, folks, right? The oil's good. It's like, what?
I know. But in retrospect, jeez. I mean, with all of those flaws, I mean, it was peace and prosperity. Mm-hmm.
Did you vote for him in 2020?
No.
I did.
Yeah, but you know, the administration I voted for colluded to silence me with.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't work out that well.
Let's talk about media manipulation and lies, because you know, I want to say I'm shocked by this story, but I'm not shocked. I was kind of shocked. Okay, the New York Post. Biden White House claims U.S. has zero inflation despite annual rate remaining at 8.5.
What?
Joe Biden actually said inflation last month, 0%. And I was like, what? Inflation's at 8.5. It's insane. It's really, really bad. Anyone who's going, you know, trying to figure out their finances right now is probably freaking out about this.
Totally.
You know what's scary? People are going to believe this. And you know what this is? The definition of a recession, the colloquial one, is two consecutive quarters of negative economic growth. Bill Clinton said it in, you know, 2001 or whatever, and the viral video from C-SPAN people are posting. And the UK considers it that. And all of a sudden they're like, no, actually, that's not the definition of a recession. So we're changing it. So they're saying the technical definition is actually quite different. So now we're not going to use that. This is what they're doing here. Technically, Joe Biden is correct. Axios reports inflation drops to zero in July due to falling gas prices.
Wow.
And what? That's not true. It's 8.5%.
Oh my gosh.
I don't think you understand. Do you ever play games with little kids and they make up the rules and then we start winning, they change the rules?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So what they're saying now is month to month inflation was zero.
Oh my gosh.
Right. Inflation is calculated on a yearly basis and they decided to change the way they calculate it so they can report and Biden can lie and tell you there's no inflation.
And every headline can say, no inflation, zero inflation under Biden, and they leave out all the details.
Yep.
Because they know you're scrolling, you're not actually reading the article. Mm-hmm. The only thing they need you to get to quote is the headline.
That's right.
Educate me here. 8.5%. Does that mean every year there's going to be an 8.5% increase?
From this time last year to this month.
It has increased by 8.5%. Yes. And he's saying last month it was 8.5%. This month it's still 8.5%.
So
there's zero.
Right. Exactly.
Unbelievable.
But it went up and then back down. So they're saying it didn't
change. It's so amazing.
Yeah, it's not
but
the
then the other issue is
it's
that
it's still
like,
8.5%.
But food cost is still way up. Gas is still way up. All of these things are way up. But gas went down a little bit. So the funny thing is, you also got to understand what it means for there to be inflation, for there to be no inflation month to month. If if gas is skyrocketing, and then it goes up from, you know, $2 to $5, and then it drops down to $4.50, they will say inflation is at zero,
down.
Even though it's massively up.
Oh my!
Because it went down just a little bit, just a, you know, teeny little bit.
But this administration plays with numbers all the time. I mean, this administration plays with numbers all the time, and they really condescend to the American people because they count on us to be innumerate or not to know how to read a chart, not to notice. I think that's why legacy media is kind of losing, hemorrhaging viewers, and alternative media is booming.
And that's why censorship is so important, because they have to try and stop that. But I do have to wonder, man, does it really matter? I think the Democrats maybe, you know, I'm imagining they're all like sitting around the consultants and like the DNC or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you know, we've tried really hard to convince half this country. Why don't we just convince the stupid people?
Right.
That's so much easier and you don't need to spend as much money.
Right.
So now they're doing things that to us, it's like brazen. Inflation is at zero. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? It's calculated on a yearly basis.
Right.
How many people right now are going, inflation is zero? Actually, inflation is zero. You're wrong. Here's Axios.
Right.
They said it's zero.
Right.
And you're like, how do you even negotiate or argue or compromise with that?
I feel like it's just a desperate move, right? We're getting so close to midterm elections that they're like, we're not going to win everybody. So we've just got to get a couple here to try and ease our way into a victory.
I said November was going to be fun. October is going to be fun. It's going to be crazy. Like, okay, so we've been swatted now 9 times since January, and plus we've had other security issues.
This group has been swatted
nine times?
SWAT teams come
into
studio?
I'm sorry, did we not tell you that before you came on the show?
I thought it was like a metaphor, a figure of speech.
No. Yeah. So after the first, like, I think 2 or 3 times, it was no longer like multi-jurisdictional armed groups coming to the
gosh.
House. The first time it happened, it was bad, like guns drawn.
What had you done?
We had Marjorie Taylor Greene.
It's a media company. They build walls around Paramount because people obsess with media.
Right,
it's too
right.
accessible.
Right.
So we've had all of those issues, and I'm like, yo, guys, if you thought it was crazy, wait till October. Right before.
Isn't it quite traumatic to be swatted one time, let alone multiple times?
The first time, you know, they actually came guns drawn and
Tim was on air.
We were on air, and the cops like come to the door, and I'm like, "What is going on?" And they're like, "Come out!" And I'm like, "I'm not coming out. What are you doing in my house?" You know what I mean?
Good lord!
But after that, they would come and do a sweep, and then apologize. And now
they're harassing you.
Well, not the police.
Right.
The police are instructed to come for every call.
I see. So people are threatening you and they come to protect you.
People call the police and then make a fake thing like, I am someone's a crazy person.
And, gotcha.
And so the cops are like, okay.
Wasn't there just a Twitch streamer who got shot during, the streamer was swatted and they got shot during?
Shot? I don't know.
Yeah,
about that.
Hold on, I'll look it up, but.
No, there was two guys who were like fighting. Mm-hmm. Online on like Call of Duty, and then one guy said, here's my address, do something, and it was a fake address. And when the guy swatted the address, and when the cops showed up, the resident had no idea what was going on, opened his door, walked out with his gun, and the cops shot and killed him. Yeah. So anyway, I don't want to harp on too much of that stuff. My point is just that as we head into October and mm-hmm. November mm-hmm. with the midterms coming up, you are going to see the craziest balls to the wall shenanigans all over the country. And October surprises. If you think there's just going to be one, no, you're wrong. It's going to be just everywhere. It's like photos are going to come out, like you're mentioning, weird photos. There's like they're claiming now that Alex Jones sent nudes to of his wife to Roger Stone or something like that. Like all of the weirdest things you can ever imagine. They're going to throw everything at the wall and hope it sticks.
I'm looking at the deep fakes. Get ready for deep fakes. I think that did you see that Biden video where his eyes are open the whole time and they're pure dark black circles? Looked like a deep fake.
Fake?
It looked like a deep fake. I couldn't tell, but it didn't look real. It didn't blank. He talked with the video a real low voice. It was really weird.
I think they just gave him uppers.
The world of deep fakes is now. Mm-hmm. Be prepared. Do not believe what you see at face value unless it's coming at you, charging you, and it's a bear.
I think they just gave Joe Biden a bunch of uppers.
Like, I'm having a hard time believing.
He's like, listen here.
I'm to the point where it's not that I disbelieve what I see. I just don't believe it. Yeah. And that could be very dangerous if it's an emergency. Like, if the boy has cried wolf many times, and now you're here, Naomi, wolf. Hello, welcome. Do you have faith in the Republic?
Generally?
In the American Republic, do you have faith of its survival?
Oh, God, that's such a difficult question. Are you, you really want the answer?
Yeah.
I think that we are at serious risk of devolving into civil war.
Hey, I agree.
You stole Tim's line.
I thought you were going to steal Tim's slogan.
There's like they say in the chat, they're like, every time Tim says civil war, drink.
What steps would you advise?
We talk about it kind of a lot.
Oh, forgive me if I'm echoing you and I did not realize.
No, we agree.
Look how much you guys have in common.
Yeah,
we do.
To advise a circumvention of that, what are some gifts you would impart?
These are my gifts. Social media and digital platforms, can be very empowering, but they're also a way to surveil and manage human communications, as we've discussed. We're messaged that the things people do together are like low tech and second rate compared to digital tools. But in fact, it's incredibly sophisticated, a room full of people talking to each other, or an auditorium full of people with a speaker talking to a giant group, or a protest, or a march with a bunch of human beings talking and sharing, or a movement where people are singing and marching and praying together. So I would say to everyone, the best thing you can do is get off your screens and get into rooms with other humans and have fellowship with them and feed them and be fed by them and fall in love with them and, you know, disclose your heart to them, because it's only those revolutions that really are peaceful and survive. And it's also a very sophisticated way to communicate information, because it's hard to hack the human brain yet. It's hard to hack a room where people are having a cocktail party or a potluck or praying together or singing together. And we've forgotten that we can gather. Like, look at what happened in this country before digital technology. You used to have whistle stops where people would talk to 1,000 people at once, or, you know, all the great movements, the women's movement, the labor movement, the civil rights movement, the abolition movement. These happen in person, in real life. So my great blessing to all of you, even if it feels weird, if you've been on screens your whole life, is to, you know, leave the screens behind for a lot of time and fall in love with other human beings.
We've got a project we're working on. We're going to be opening up a physical location where we're going to have gaming. So we'll have like a Magic the Gathering, D&D, we'll have card games, we'll have board games, we'll have coffee probably, maybe sandwiches or something like that. We'll have skating stuff as well.
Love it.
But the plan is, with this space, Saturday mornings, we're going to do Saturday morning cartoons, where the idea is, you don't really have Saturday morning cartoons anymore,
because
everything's VOD on demand digital. But when I was younger, we'd wake up on Saturday and watch the cartoons. So we can have families come, You bring your kids to hang out and watch good family content that is approved by the families. None of this weird stuff they're making for kids. There will be like a breakfast buffet and parents will get to interact with each other. And the idea that I was having was there's a lot of people that don't go to church. Mm-hmm. Church does provide some kind of something similar. It provides community.
Right.
So what can we do to bring more people? Hey, come hang out Saturday morning, something to do with the family. We're going to have pancakes. We're going to have waffles, eggs, sausage, bacon, some vegan and vegetarian options, coffee, milk, orange juice. The kids will watch cartoons. Everybody will eat. We'll all learn from each other, meet each other, and we'll hang out. That's what you got to do, building community.
Beautiful. I love it. I love it. And when people actually encounter each other, they realize there's nothing to fear, you know, overwhelmingly. Yeah. You know, people will meet who think they're across a political divide, and they'll have a conversation and realize, like, you're not a weirdo, you're not a monster. Our kids are playing together.
I kind of like it when someone gets heated, and then you still listen to them, and you're still kind of even more bonded afterwards,
right?
Because you chose to listen to them,
yeah,
and not like shut them down before they got too angry.
Isn't
or whatever.
That gorgeous?
Yeah, I love it.
My best learning has come from talking to people I think I'm going to completely disagree with. I don't know why people are so scared of it. It's so exciting to hear what someone has to say who totally sees the world in an oppositional way to one's own thoughts. Like, how exciting is that? You learn so much.
Yeah, I used to chat roulette, and I'd come up on people from China and talk to these Chinese people. I don't know if they're behind the iron curtain.
Chat roulette, that's
awesome.
Yeah,
chat roulette. You just hit roulette, and then you randomly roulette with another. Sometimes it's like, you know, a little bit pornographic. But
I was going to say,
sometimes it's someone
in China. No one go on there. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, I haven't been on chat roulette in a while, but great functionality. And it was... I would like to hear from them now. Yes. I want to know what they're experiencing from the Chinese point of view. Wow. It's important that
they won't be able to tell you the truth if they're based in China, but you should stay in contact with them. I should add to that beautiful scene of people having pancakes or having potluck or talking to each other. We also need to know where our food is coming from. My husband and I just bought a quarter of a cow from
cool.
a local farmer. Now we have to freezer, but I expect leading up to November, shortages in food, cyber attacks, power grid outages, all kinds of things to destabilize and scare people. And we need to be able to defend our homes.
Another reason to know your neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. The internet community that you build yourself can be great, but no one is going to come help you if, let's say, a tree falls on your house or,
absolutely.
You know, you need something in the middle of the night, right? You need to know and invest in the people who are physically around you because ultimately they control or they influence the environment you're in. And that is more important than the environment you build for yourself online because that is contrived.
Yes. I would add to that, there's so much nonsense about gender, right? Which I did not intend. I didn't do it. Didn't mean it. Wasn't
okay,
what I meant,
sure.
Right? I really didn't. I was never that kind of feminist. But we need men. You know, we need women. We need men. We need people of all genders, obviously. But when things fall apart, and I thoroughly expect institutions will fall apart, you know, grids will fall apart. There's going to be chaos leading up to November and after. That's what they want.
But
clearly,
you
need men as well as women.
But you think in the next few months we're going to see this stuff, like food shortages, grids?
We're seeing them. I predicted this. I predicted food shortages starting in probably January of this year. And it was a time of great abundance, and we hadn't had empty shelves. And now we have food shortages. You know, people are going to be cold. They're cold in... They're planning on people being cold in Europe because the supply lines,
the fuel prices
exactly.
are through the roof. I periodically will do shout outs for safeandreadymeals.com. That is not literally a shout out, but I do want to mention it because I often bring up, I was mocked by many on the left for promoting emergency food supplies. It's confusing to me.
Why? Why would they not be like, cool, you want to be prepared? Have a good time.
But that's the crazy thing
it's a right wing extremist thing to
think ahead,
survival.
To think about your future.
Exactly. People think it's fear-mongering and he's trying to make money off of scaring people, but dude, he's a realist.
What is the downside? It's like having a condom if you're sexually active, right?
It's like
just have some food
kit.
in your basement or whatever, and water.
But
exactly.
That's the crazy, I'm like, as a first aid kit, like prepping?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
It's like, bro, it's like
yes,
one
it
thing
is.
Of food. It's like you put
but
in your closet.
There's a huge class thing here, right? Like upper middle class people have first aid kits, so that's okay. But once you get into freeze-dried meals, you know, somehow people like us don't have freeze-dried
hamburger
meals.
Hamburger helper, same thing.
Dude, lentils. Dried lentils, man.
Dried lentils are okay, right?
That's pretty really good. I got to admit, Ian makes a mean lentil stew.
I'm going to do it.
So have they come
tomorrow.
Around?
The bread's gone.
Have they come around? Yeah, like, really do, does the left, you know, see the point of ready meals?
They this guy I knew, like a friend of mine, started making fun of me and he was like, oh, look at this loser. Because he was like trying to earn points on the internet by bragging on me. And I'm like, dude, my whole thing is like, why would you need emergency food? Because there was a flood recently that was really bad and it shut the roads down and people had trouble getting food and it's non-perishable. So if your fridge goes out or whatever, you have a set amount of food that'll last you 2 weeks or whatever. Just same as you'd have a first aid kit or a jug of water.
Right.
But they think it's just, it's anti-tribal. It's outside of their tribe. So anyone, but look, I literally don't care, man.
Right.
When
you're gonna have the food.
I'm gonna have food. I got chickens.
Yeah, I saw. They're awesome.
And those chickens make food for me.
Beautiful.
Yeah, they eat bugs. They eat feed too, but you know, if we wanted to, we could do the bug thing. What you do is you put wood down and then every morning you move the wood and the bugs all run out and the chickens
eat. But look at what we were taught to mock, right? I'm looking back at 30 years of liberal mockery that I internalized. You mock survival. You mock masculinity. You mock, you know, the idea that someone's a woman and a mother, not to criticize any other genders or sexualities. You mock religion. You mock, tradition. You mock history. And who wants that? Our adversaries want that. And now I look at like, you know, the influence, their influencers that our adversaries send to skew people like your friend and to say to them, hey, it's really stupid that your friend has ready meals. Well, whom does that serve? People want to drive us into the ground and have us hungry and disempowered. Yep. It serves them.
Because when everything does fall apart, these people are going to rush to the city center, get on their knees and say, save us.
Exactly.
And they're going to say,
oh, the quarantine camp has food. Come on in.
Yeah.
I had a vision last night of, I was walking, like on horseback riding by people that had been devastated by starvation, just looking at me as I'm riding by. Like you see in the movie where the noble goes through the village that's been torched and they're just like looking at the people and the people don't even have the energy to grab at the horse. They're just like laying there. And the horror that of the person that's never seen it face to face, that just struck me like lightning last night. It was terrifying.
Wow. I feel like there's a segment of culture that tells you, and I don't want to be too mean to the liberals, but I do think it's sort of a more left-leaning perspective that says, like, you should live for the now, and you should be self-indulgent, and you should think about this, whereas a lot of conservative people who are brought up in more conservative homes are taught, like, you should plan for the future. Right, and that involves everything from saving money, like, tithing to your church is something that a lot of conservative parents teach their children, but also, like, think about if you want to have kids in the future and how that will affect you, whereas there's a different segment of culture that is, like, it's all... It doesn't matter. You just have to do what feels good in the moment. We have to be self-indulgent. We have to think in terms of immediate pleasure and not in long-term happiness. And that's, I think, the same segment that says, like, why would you buy meals to be prepared? Like, being prepared is not an immediate thing. Being prepared is something forward-thinking.
It's that rental society. People are like, I don't want to get locked into an area, so I'm going to keep renting.
I don't want to get locked into survival.
I don't want to commit to a community that I would have to invest in and get to know my neighbors. Mm-hmm. I want to be able to be transient and have the idea that I'm always free because I can pick up and move at any time, but ultimately I'm detached and I'm lonely.
Right. It is a sort of freedom, like to have all your music digitally on Spotify. You don't have to carry around your CDs, which are 50 pounds. But if the power goes out, that's like you had all that rental that's not there.
Well, I mean, if the power goes out, you can't play CDs either.
Right.
You know. And Spotify's going to take out the songs that are not correct anymore, that have words we're not supposed to say. You
hand
need to buy
crank
VHS.
Vinyl?
Yes. Yeah.
There you go.
That's forever.
I got some vinyl. I have like 15. Some good classic rock, some good Smashing Pumpkins.
I think an element of what you were saying is, as well is we on the left are trained to trust the government and not given a message of self-reliance.
I'm sorry about that.
No,
that seems sad.
Really,
I don't like that.
I know. I don't.
But why? Like that. Punk rock, man. Like
I know.
When I
was
grew up,
you guys?
It was like, don't trust.
Was that you guys?
I know.
Now it's really funny, you know. So when I was younger, I listened to The Offspring. They're like my favorite band. So I'm a little kid. My mom played folk stuff and Three Dog Night and whatever, and it's cool. Then all the kids in the neighborhood were listening to rap and hip-hop. But then some other friends of mine were like, listen to The Offspring. And then I was like, oh, cool. You know, it's pop punk. It's not, you know, not nearly the same. But they're supposed to be a punk band, and they kicked out their drummer because he didn't get vaccinated.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, they fired him after 14 years because he couldn't get it. He had his doctor recommended against it over a risk of Guillain-Barré syndrome that they believe he had. And so he was like, the doctor says no, and they're like, you're out. And they were like, look, you're not going to be able to play these venues that have the mandates. And it's just crazy to me because I'm like,
they didn't resist at all. They didn't. They didn't put up a fight at all.
And not even that, right? If it were me, and I said we're going to go to a venue, and I mean, I got to be honest. If it were me, I'd be like, then I don't do the show, mm-hmm. and I'll tell each and every one of my fans, if he doesn't come, I don't come. Because right. imagine if, like, imagine it was the 50s. And this band was going to play a venue and their drummer was a black guy. And they were like, we don't allow, you know, your drummer, he's black. They'd be like, well, I guess we have to fire yep. you. No, I'd be like, dude, no way. Right. Then we don't go to your venue.
Exactly right.
But anyway, it's like, where's the anti-establishment punk rock stuff? They're like, well, sorry, guy, you're fired. Here's the best part. One, they could have just said, we will not abandon you, dude. Mm-hmm. We understand your medical issue. The doctor is recommending you don't get it. This puts us in a bind. Mm-hmm. We want to play shows. We're going to get another drummer to tour with us, but we're here ready and willing to work with you for all the other stuff. We're not going to leave you behind. Right. They could also have rehired him once the mandates were removed from these venues.
They didn't do that
either. Yeah. So, Pete Parada is his name. He's been playing drums for us. He's an amazing person. I am,
you hired him.
Well, he's doing a bunch of drums for a bunch right, of projects, right, but right. I'm like, dude, it would be an honor and a privilege.
He's so good.
Right, I believe it.
Yeah, so we just filmed a music video with him.
Yeah.
And it was, he's so good.
Majestic.
This is a tragic story. I mean, how is it different from Ella Fitzgerald? How is it different from African American artists who were not allowed to sing at Carnegie Hall? Exactly the same.
And I want to stress this to people because I know they're going to be like, "Oh, you can get the vaccine." His doctor said no. You're
but
saying
also,
like,
also, hello, my body, my choice. I've believed in my body, my choice since I was 15. It's nobody's right. business whether he gets it or not, right? We have sovereign yeah. autonomy.
He but, doesn't have to justify it. Exactly. He just doesn't have
but,
to get
but
it.
But to even, you know, go after any potential arguments they might have, if you are unable to, due to a medical condition, so you get barred from you get fired from your job and barred entry. Like, imagine if there was a business that was a venue and they said, no epileptics because we can't be responsible for you. It's like, dude, that's not okay, man. Mm-hmm. Like, we should be accommodating to people. So, like, I agree with that. That's a liberal position. These people don't hold any of these values. They're like, whatever the machine says, we don't want to fight back. We don't want to be in the way.
Well, this was definitely one of the most shocking. I did follow the money in the bodies of others, and vast sums are going to, I don't know if it went to this band, but vast sums are going to influencers all the way down to college level. I mean, this FOIA of the CDC shows that they're thanking the social media groups for enlisting college influencers in, you know, their goals of censorship and directing everyone.
Salesmen for pharmaceutical companies?
Exactly. And even to churches and synagogues and little wow. social groups. I mean, tiny dance troops in the Bronx, they got money to go along with COVID education, mm-hmm. COVID norms, including this kind of messaging.
Did you see, we talked about this yesterday, it was a CNBC article that said it was like pharmaceutical, it was investment firms, Goldman Sachs, I think, were saying, hey, curing diseases is like not a good long-term revenue prospect. So, and it's like, confirming everything. I remember the left was very much like, we don't trust big pharma because they don't cure diseases. They treat symptoms so they mm-hmm. can make more money and keep you as a subscriber. Mm-hmm. And now they're outright just writing these articles. And the left is like marching in lockstep along with big pharma.
Do you understand? Because I don't understand this. This is like pure cult. Hypnosis. It's a yeah. cult.
It's a cult.
It's a cult.
If it was, and they're like, if you support Trump, you're in a cult. I'm like, bro.
No, I think you're in the cult.
Yeah, like the people who Trump has his cult, you know, very diehard people. But like, where are they? Are they on TV? Are they in like, where are they? There's a handful of politicians I would say are diehard Trump, but for the most part, it's like there's libertarians, there's disaffected liberals, and there's conservatives. They don't agree on everything. But they just think you're in a cult, so it's like not even about Trump.
Well, I'm meeting a lot of conservatives and libertarians who aren't particularly supportive of President Trump, but who are horrified, and homeless former liberals like myself, who are simply horrified at what's coming over the hill from the Biden administration and these allies and, you know, other sort of aligned World Economic Forum puppets all over the world like Macron and Boris Johnson and so on. And so I think it's kind of beyond left and right at this point, right?
Yeah, it's more economic for me. The Federal Reserve tariff, it bothers me. It doesn't terrify me. It just bothers me that we've passively allowed a private company to run our economy for 120 years and knock us into depressions. It's insane. It's yeah. moronic. And we need to investigate the Federal Reserve. We need to audit the Federal Reserve. And if there's any malfeasance, repeal the Federal Reserve Act. and take control of our monetary supply back, we're going to need to do a currency recall. It's the only way. We're going to devastate America's experience as the global currency. That's inevitable. It's happening whether we want it to or not right now. We've already seen Russia and China building BRICS and these other, their economy.
Yeah.
And it's either we do it ourselves, like ripping the Band-Aid off, digging open the scab and getting in there with a bristle and some soap to cut out the black rot, or it's going to kill us by poisoning our blood system. So
Ron Paul, maybe.
Yeah,
you
got to
return a sound currency.
But dig it open, man. If you get black stuff under your skin, you got to cut it open and dig it out. I mean, that's you got
to
take control of your body. The United States is our body.
That's intense.
Yeah. I had to do that once. I was riding my bike down a hill and I had a basketball in my arm and the basketball came out of my arm. So I flailed and my foot got caught in my front spoke. I went flying over, skidded across the gravel and I had all this embedded gravel in my hand. So I went home with, got some nail clippers and just cut all the skin open.
All right.
And it healed completely back to normal within like 3 days.
It's not just
the human
the Fed,
body
though.
Is crazy.
We've also got the SWIFT payment system. You got the IMF.
Might have been a week.
You've got international.
Yeah, the Bank of International Settlements in right. Switzerland. It's a big. It's not a worldwide cartel, but it's a big one. Australia, England, United States are
didn't
three
they,
of the biggest.
Did they boot Russia off SWIFT? Did they do that or no?
They did it first.
But
they
aren't you guys saying two different things? You're saying go back to sound money, right? And you're saying get rid of the dollar.
No. He's saying the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve notes are their...
Yeah, we don't actually use dollars right now. We use Federal Reserve promissory notes.
Oh.
They lend the American government a promissory note, and then they say, okay, now you have to pay us back this note at interest, and that's why all your dollars actually say Federal Reserve note on it, because it's private property.
It's a really easy way to explain it to people. There's five people sitting here right now. Imagine we were all trading amongst each other something of value, but one person was allowed to make the money. They wouldn't have to do any work. They would just be like, I'm going to write right here that I have $5, and then here you go, give me your stuff.
I think what we could do is issue a currency recall. So you say, you have 2 years, every human on earth can give us, we'll say the American government, your dollars, and we'll return you a U.S. Crypto token or something on a blockchain. And then... there's going to be a diminishing return. You're going to lose 20% of whatever you give us.
You're supportive of digital currency?
If it's on a blockchain and it's transparent, yes. If it's just a central bank currency where they can just make as many as they want, no.
Naomi has such a stressed look on her face.
What's going to happen is we're going to have to keep creating new blockchains with new tokens as we expand.
But here's the issue with digital currencies is it's all trackable.
Totally.
Everything you do forever will be publicly...
It's a plus and a minus.
No, it's a minus, man.
I mean, cash is key, for sure.
Tracking every transaction that person has made.
I don't advocate busting up localities that want to do their local... You know, we could have valence shells of tokens and currencies.
Well, I'll say this. You can, have a Bitcoin and then have a physical representation that you can trade so no one knows which hands it exchanged. The value is just stored in account. So if you have like a cold wallet or something, and it's like got one Bitcoin on it, it doesn't actually move on the blockchain if you hand the physical drive to someone and they bounce it around. So that's possible.
Yeah, if you could print something like on a daily printer, like on a piece of like graphene paper that has like a code in it, like a circuit in there that has the data of the token on it, that'd be cool.
Or I mean, to put it simply, people could open a crypto bank where they hold 100 Bitcoin and then issue. This represents one Bitcoin, but they never do fractional reserve banking. It's just this is always redeemable for us for a Bitcoin, and then anyone can trade amongst themselves. That's the way money originally was. It was a silver certificate.
So when people turn their U.S. dollars back in, they're going to lose a 20% of their money, but the wealthier you are, the more you're going to lose. The more money you give back, the more of a percent's going to be taken out because we have to deflate our economy. We can't live with this amount of worthless dollars in the system right now.
I am hearing that from a lot of people, including highly placed kind of hedge fund insiders, that the amount of money sloshing around that is imaginary is terribly dangerous.
I was looking at like the history of currency recalls, and they're not normally very peaceful for people.
No,
kind
I imagine.
Of brutal. So
yeah.
if we could do it, I mean, the thing is...
Do you think we could do it peacefully?
Yeah. Well, peaceful is kind of a... general term, like what that means. You might have to, people might suffer, but we could do it without instigating a war.
All right, we're going to go to Super Chats. If you haven't already, would you kindly smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, and share the show with your friends. We're going to have that members-only show coming up for you at 11 p.m., and this one's going to be really good, spicy. It's going to be about the government and malfeasance and issues that YouTube is none too happy with. But we'll leave it at that, and we'll read some of your super chats now. All right, let's see. Moonphaser says, I'm worried they trick Trump into a war with China. I hope they don't fool him into anything crazy if he becomes president in 2024. I don't know who they is. You mean like the establishment or the political class or whatever? I don't know. I don't think they'd be able to. Trump is very much like America first, borders, no war. So we'll see. All right. Dalimar says, register to vote 2 months minimum before day.
Good point.
Day of. ID, pen, paper, hand count, national, state, and local holiday. Absentee for deployed military only. All over excuses or reasons. Oh, well, don't care. Yeah, everybody should be, make sure right now you're registered to vote. Right now.
Yeah.
And then call five of your friends and make sure they're registered to vote. Tell all your buddies, like, hey, everybody.
And that they're going to vote.
Right.
That's the other part.
Well, the best thing is I'm like, when it comes to election day, what you do is you invite all your friends out to get pizza and beer. And then while you're driving, you stop at the voting location of their area. Awesome. And then be like, we're just going to run in real quick, make sure we vote. And then we're going to go and have wings and beer. And that's the way you got to do it. I also believe that election day should be a national holiday.
Yeah.
And there should be one day, as the Constitution prescribes. Intuitive Coder says, I like Ian. Ruler of Star says, I also like Ian.
Oh, shit.
It's happening.
You good over there?
I'm getting hot, but yeah, I'm okay.
That's great.
All right. We will grab, I want to try and find some good super checks.
Yeah, those last two sucked. Just kidding.
Yeah, people liking Ian. What are you doing?
What?
Joe Spinella says, Tim, you need to get former IRS agent Joseph Bannister, as well as author of Income Tax Shattering, The Myth Dave Champion, on your show. Both found there is no lawmaking 99% of Americans. Dave alone hasn't filed for 24 years. I do not believe that's true.
Excuse me?
There was a very famous case about Ed and Elaine Brown where a bunch of government agents came and arrested them because they did not pay their taxes. So pretty sure that's not true.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. All right. Let's grab some good questions. Always want to make sure we're getting the good ones. All right. Eve Welcome says, please have Naomi go through the 10 steps free societies are shut down. End of America was a warning ignored. Yeah. Is it really, really long and verbose, or is it easy enough to go through?
I'm actually Googling my article, but I will skip over some. So you start with a terrifying internal and external threat. As I mentioned, it can be a real threat, but hyped and exaggerated, like the global war on terror or a virus that most people don't
came
have
from
a problem
somewhere.
With. Exactly. Then you get into creating a thug caste. Then you get into creating a place outside the rule of law where prisoners are held, like your point about January 6th prisoners or yeah. Guantanamo in the case of the global war on terror. You create a surveillance society. So people are spying on people or, you know, digital technology is tracking people. And then I'll skip ahead, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, you start to criminalize speech, as you and I were discussing. Mm-hmm. You start to target key individuals in the culture, which we're also seeing, being taken out. You start to create an environment in which people can't tell truth from lies. There's so much confusion, so much lying, misinformation in the news. People just kind of give up. And then step 10 is suspend the rule of law, martial law, which most people don't even know we're at right now. Maybe your clued in viewers do know, but most Americans literally don't know that President Biden extended emergency law in April because of the situation in Iran. I kid you not. Like, who's writing his material? But he keeps extending it in an open-ended way. And state by state, many states, 28 states are still under emergency law and extending it, like New York State, my tyrannical governor Hochul extended emergency law every 30 days. So we're there. We're at step 10.
Wow. All right. Shadow Cloud says only a few years ago, she was pro-abortion up until birth.
That is not true.
Not true.
That is categorically not true. And I really wonder why that's being attributed to me.
Because you're a feminist?
Well, let's hear more.
They say her Crowder interview has her stance changed.
I literally strongly object to something I didn't say being attributed to me. I think that people should check their sources before they claim that people believe things they don't believe. And I refer everybody to an essay I wrote called Our Bodies, Our Souls in 1995, which is much syndicated and you can find it anywhere, in which I explain my incredible unhappiness about the moral angst and difficulties that arise with abortion after the first trimester. Mm-hmm. I do believe that for women to have any autonomy at all, we have to control our reproduction for the first trimester, the first 40 days in my tradition. I'm Jewish. You know, there are other traditions that allow for abortions in the first 40 days. It's not good. It's not happy. It's always a failure of something. But I do not believe in abortion after the first trimester. I don't.
Yeah, so I was noticing, this is something that I had wanted to ask you about. In 1995, you were saying that we need to call abortion exactly what it is, which is murder, and it does no one any service to call it anything other than that. Do you think that's a fair representation? Do you still think that?
Can you repeat your summary? I just want to make sure.
So I don't know. Right. Hopefully I've got the summary right. But my understanding was that you were saying it does no one any service to call it anything other than what it is, which is simply murder. I think you were probably referring to after the first trimester.
I said it's death. It's right. Death of a being. I don't know that I used the word murder. I'd have to check. But I definitely, the gist of that article was, we pro-choice feminists are lying when we use phrases like a clump of cells, and that it has no moral integrity to say a four-month fetus that we want is all, oh, look at the sonogram. Isn't it cute? Here, let's frame the sonogram. And a four-month fetus that we don't want is just something to be, you know, flushed away or done away with. And that I love feminists for life. I love them because they point out that feminism for 100 years before the second wave of feminism opposed abortion and saw women's need for abortion. It's always an act of desperation, right? Right. No one wants to have an abortion. Right. No one I know has ever wanted, like, you want an abortion rather than a baby sometimes in your life, unfortunately. Not you, but many women I know. But people aren't like, oh, how wonderful, I'm having an abortion. But
they are now.
I think that there is a push to make it like that.
I don't think people are like, I want to get pregnant so I can have an abortion.
Lena Dunham said that.
Yeah, after maybe she meant it, maybe not. But I don't think she really was like seeking it out. She never did. She might have said it. She didn't do it.
It's tribal cultism where they want to be a part of the cult.
I mean, some little kids want to smash ants just to watch them suffer, so maybe.
They also want to divorce you from the consequences of what an abortion is really like. I remember, Teen Vogue famously did this article where they were like, what to get your friend when she has an abortion? And it's like, movies, so she has something to watch. And Planned Parenthood enamel pins for her backpack because they were able to provide her this important service. I mean, this is a publication which has become very left, slightly radical. Mm-hmm. Theoretically is targeted at teenagers. What's a teenager? 13 to 18, 19 maybe at the most. I mean, they're encouraging young women to think of this choice as sort of this weird, quirky milestone. Like, you treat it the same way when your friend goes through a bad breakup. Bring her some ice cream and a good movie.
I totally know what you're talking about because the culture was even there when I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And in high school, I remember that it was like, oh, you went to Planned Parenthood. Oh, no, you know, you gossip. And Planned Parenthood, like, I love them in a lot of ways because they help protect young women from getting pregnant. That is really important. But there was this kind of trivializing of the abortion, or almost glamorizing of the trip to Planned Parenthood to have it done and the drama and so on. And I've seen that. I mean, I've seen, websites aimed at saying that parents who want to know about their teenage girls being pregnant or choosing abortion or to have a say in it are coercive and oppressive patriarchs. And really there's this glamorization of taking over the teenager and you know, getting her through this in a kind of cozy, cute way. And that's disgusting. But what I just wanted to share, because it was so new to me when I first heard about it, is that Feminists for Life have what they call a seamless web of life philosophy. They oppose capital punishment and they oppose abortion, but they make the case that if we really had, and I wrote a Substack about this recently, if we really had a pro-woman society, we wouldn't treat abortion the way we do now. We would have all kinds of support for young women who got pregnant. Mm-hmm. The women who most often have abortions are in their 20s, right? So what might we have? We would have maybe places they could go, you know, to bring their baby to term. We would have easy adoption. We would have free contraception. We would have all kinds of real choices that don't drive young women into just this one choice. And they would be supported. And you know, good nutrition and all the things that they need. And we don't do that right now. It's just either, you know, exploit them as child bearers or exploit them as people to abort and then kind of trivialize.
Have you seen all the pregnancy centers that were attacked, vandalized, or firebombed?
Terrible.
It's crazy.
It's terrible. It's terrible. And I'm sorry, I'm going to go further and say I think young people are having what I can only call... I used to think people who talked like this were crazy right-wingers, but I do think there's a kind of evil, kind of almost satanic discourse.
Everybody drinks.
Culture.
She said it.
Yeah. Do you say satanic?
No, I'm just kidding. No, but I'm making it up for you.
Thank you.
Yeah, people call it black-pilled. Like, if people are... Really, if they have etched in that they were overpopulated, that kind of myth has been propagated. Whether or not it's real or fake myth, it's a myth. It's a story that we have been telling ourselves that there's just this idea of like burn it all, you know, whatever. If it's too much, then it's too much. I give up kind of thing, which you could call evil or satanic.
Alex Jones says demons, demonic. Hmm. And he doesn't mean, to a certain degree, he doesn't mean literally these people are demons. He means figuratively these are demonic individuals.
Well, it's demonic to say a 6-month-old fetus is nothing. That's demonic.
I completely agree. Like your position on it really, I think, exemplifies my family and how we viewed it. I was always told growing up, it's never a good thing. It's always bad. But, you know, we don't like the idea of within a certain period, like the government coming in. But my family... Urban liberals were like, at a certain point, like, you're just killing a baby, you know what I mean?
Yeah, seriously.
These days, you know, they're cheering for it.
It's terrifying.
So when we had on this progressive guy in your seat, me here, and a Catholic conservative, Seamus Coghlan, who wants abortion banned in all circumstances across the board, and he wasn't even arguing. It was me and the progressive guy arguing, and he was calling me right wing, and I'm like, bro, I'm pro-choice. Like, I'm like traditional pro-choice.
Wow.
And I think you've crossed the line, but he was like, the woman can choose at any point to terminate the baby, even at 9 months.
But what is this going to do? Like, why not then kill neonates? You know, why not then kill
have you seen Governor Northam in Virginia?
Totally. There are two state bills. I've seen them. I thought the right-wing crazies were making it up. But then I read the bills. Mm-hmm. And I have this wonderful editor, Kate Malgoza, who's in her 20s, who did a breakdown of one of these bills. They let the baby die, both in Washington State and in Virginia, a month after birth.
Virginia. I don't know if they passed it, or I think they tried to. I think it failed.
Yeah.
But Northam was like, you'll resuscitate the baby and make it comfortable and then have a conversation about what to do. And I'm like, what? Like, he was trying to make a point about viability or like deform or whatever. But bro, if the baby is resuscitated and alive, there is no circumstance. You know, I can understand a circumstance where it's like, we can help it live for 5 minutes and it's going to die. And that's probably cruel. It's another thing to outline in law, a viable baby that can survive on its own can be killed.
Oh, and it says that, like, the bills say that.
Yeah, they do. The Democrats tried passing that nationally, and Manchin was the one who blocked it.
But who did that? I mean, people have to remember their history. Nazis did that. Nazis did that from 1930 to 1933 before they were in power. They did what's happening to especially people your age, or your age, I should say. They progressively eroded the idea that there was any sanctity to life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you start with the mentally ill. They're, you know, useless eaters. They're life unworthy of life. Then you move on to the okay, it's 1938. We go after the Jews. Okay, it's, you know, 1942. We feed them into ovens. This is a progression. And, I mean, cannibalism, like, people are telling me, oh, yeah, there's this cannibalism thing in pop culture. I'm like, oh, come on, really?
The New York Times.
And then there it is.
Yeah.
Or, you know, there are these satanic images in pop culture. I'm like, come on, really? That's, I mean, so you guys silly. Are crazy Christians, whatever. But there it is, you know?
Lots
and so this is really happening. And I think it's intentional because effort goes into drafting those bills. You have to pay lawyers to draft those bills. Why are they drafting those bills? No one's clamoring. There's no lobby saying, I want to let, you know, newborn month-olds die. This is absolutely, I believe, coming from our enemies to degrade us.
It's certainly coming from Yuval Noah Harari at the World Economic Forum.
Totally.
He calls people useless eaters. He's referenced the useless class like if they're not useless.
Yeah, to be fair, though, yes. Moloch does demand child sacrifice.
Well, all right, that's a good point.
Yeah.
All right,
let's read some more Super Chats. We got Sergeant Kirk who says, private citizens can and should be able to have nuclear weapons. We already live in a world where they do. Who makes the nuclear weapons for the government? Private corporations.
Yeah.
True facts. Private individuals. So when you have an FFL, you can actually, someone told me this is a form you can fill out for nuclear weapons because it is private corporations that make them all. Government doesn't make them. Halliburton and Boeing and Northrop Grumman and all that stuff.
They make the warheads, they make the missiles, but they don't make them attached. They let the government do the...
Is that true?
I don't know. It's like building the receiver, but not building the gun.
All right. Andrew Reese says, Naomi, curious if your opinion of Camille Paglia has changed over time. Any new conversations or responses to each other's work since the 90s? You speak of Marxist influence similar to her.
Huh. Interesting. I don't think I started the name calling in the 90s, but this is ancient history. But yeah, Camille Paglia was a protege of Harold Bloom, who sexually molested me essentially when I was an undergraduate. And I think it's interesting that she kind of hounded me the first decade of my career. And Harold Bloom was such a force behind her kind of astronomical ascent from nowhere. But I'm always willing to engage with anyone. I haven't had any approaches from her for many years. And she never, to your point about debate, I once ran into her physically and I'd never met her before. She'd just been sniping at me for, you know, a long time and calling me names. And I said, you know, we should really have an open public discussion, an open debate, a constructive debate. And she sort of scurried away.
Did she wave her hands and go, no.
Not going to do that. No, she just kind of fled like a, you know, little marmoset.
All right. And let's grab some good super chats. Let's see what we got. Mr. Devilman says, I don't protest. I just want to be left alone. I am trained to fight wars. You never want to see a war, but if there is one, I'll be one of the many bringing on the war machine. Mm. That's what we hear a lot. The people who are actually trained in war are the ones begging it not to happen.
Yeah.
Civil war, whatever. So you mentioned potential civil war. I talk about it quite a bit. 4 years ago with the street fighting, I was reading these articles talking about the prospect of civil war and seeing this. I said, it feels like we're on track for one. When do you think, if it were to happen, like, what's your timeline?
Well, let me stress that civil war is terrible. I don't want it. I don't want anyone to take this out of context out there in internet land and media land and misunderstand me. But I see it happening already. I mean, civil wars, failed states are really interesting, like or states where there's no rule of law. Like, I was in Sierra Leone in 2006. And there was no rule of law. That's why I'm so scared of a state of no rule of law. But there were militias. And so we're kind of there, right? Like when Antifa, or whoever they were, I think they were heavily infiltrated because the left just isn't that organized. But when people are burning whole neighborhoods in cities, that's already a form of civil war. Right. And when people are, when there's eminent domain, when things are being taken from people, as we're seeing with the Dutch farmers or the truckers or the people who supported the truckers, that's already an aspect of civil war. The war is being waged already against the people of North America, the people of the West. I mean, this is the argument of my book, The Bodies of Others. So it's not always violence in the street, although there is plenty of violence in the street. It's also theft and restrictions. This whole idea in lockdowns that there were places you couldn't go, that's part of civil war, right? Where some people claim rights to certain territories and other people aren't allowed to go there. And that restrictions only happen to populations that are about to have their assets stolen from them, like in the Warsaw Ghetto or Native Americans on reservations. So we're in a civil war already. The whole defund the police movement, I think, is part of waging war against the American people or instigating a civil war, because the more crime there is, as we've said, the more people have to kind of turn to themselves to defend themselves. This bill, 86,000 new IRS agents, they keep trying to create militias. Remember, step two is you create a thug cast, you create a Blackwater, a militia, black shirts, brown shirts, thugs that are not accountable, you know, up and down the chain of command in an organized structure of the rule of law. And this administration and these World Economic Forum puppets around the world are creating those. Like, those guys dressed in black who are beating up the truckers in Canada are the same guys dressed in black who are beating up protesters in France. And they look like mercenaries. They're not like local police.
There were anti-mandate protesters outside of a hospital, and Antifa showed up and started beating them. And it's like, so the guys outside oppose government intervention, and anti-fascists support government intervention. Funny. All right, Slane Hope says, Ian clearly didn't learn a thing from Uncle Ben's death. Cutting criminals loose has consequences. The left is already doing this. How is that working?
I don't know who Uncle Ben is. Who are they talking
about? So here's what happened, Ian. Spider-Man was, he was at a wrestling match, and he was denied the money he was supposed to win because the promoter was like, yeah, what are you going to do about it? And then he was like, psh. Then this guy comes in and steals the money and runs off, and the promoter goes, hey, stop that guy. And then Spider-Man's all like, oh, you know, what are you going to do about it or something like that? And then he goes outside, and the dude who stole the money is trying to get away and tries stealing a car, and then shoots the man inside, who happens to be Spider-Man's Uncle Ben. You see?
So
the moral of the story was, with great power comes great responsibility.
I see. But this is a crime in process? That Uncle Ben got killed during a crime in process?
Yeah.
Okay, that's
but
not
Spider-Man
what I'm
could have stopped him. He could have stopped the criminal, but he chose not to, out of a personal vendetta.
He chose to let the criminal go.
The criminal running towards him, and he goes, stop him. He's like, no.
I don't advocate ignoring future crime. That's not what I'm talking about. If someone wants to commit a crime after we do a great pardon, then they're going to jail, or they're going to face
consequences. Wait a minute. Hold on. I got to stop. Slane, you're wrong. It was revealed in Spider-Man 3 that it was actually Sandman that killed Uncle Ben. And it was an accident, and Spider-Man forgave him.
Huh. Retconned for your generosity.
Well, but the point was, Spider-Man ultimately forgave Sandman, who apologized, saying he didn't mean to do it. It was an accident. And Spider-Man had to learn to let that pain go.
Exactly. When someone has wronged you and you still forgive them, who's the Christian here?
I don't know if any of these analogies actually work or make sense. I think it's just funny to talk about Spider-Man. All right. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, Chaircast IRL rocked 40,000 concurrent viewers.
Yeah.
So when we had a credible threat, what was it, like 2 months ago or something?
Yeah, just about.
We were forced to evacuate. And we just left the show on as we were kept outside by the police. And wow. They had to bring dogs in.
The room cam.
Yeah, so we did the wide cam, and it was 40,000 people stayed and watched an empty room for 3 hours.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's kind of cool. It was kind of lame that we had to leave, you know. But
kind of
you know,
stream, but, you know.
Yeah, you can find the silver lining to these constant threats.
I'm really sorry you guys are going through this.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is what it is. It's civil war, right?
It's that we're running an entertainment company. That's why they build walls around the entertainment companies, because people want to go there and say hi and be part of it.
I remember America.
That's not what SWAT
when,
is, though.
Yeah, interaction. I remember America when journalists and entertainers were not, in fear of their lives.
But since the dawn of internet video, Tim has no overhead. He started with a camera in his bedroom. That's what people are getting way more famous.
Living room.
I digress. They have way more fame than they have money right now for security. So people are in this just bizarre reality of exposure that has never existed in the past.
You know, there was something special about that first room I set up. I would take a GoPro 4 and I'd put it on top of my monitor and just press record.
Wow.
And then I would just talk for like 10 minutes and that was it. And it was like, and that slowly got longer and longer. But those were special days.
I advocate building a walled compound. I think it makes a lot of sense. When you run an entertainment company, you just need to build, like, barriers.
Look, I married my bodyguard. I'm not going to judge you for caring about security.
You're a libertarian bodyguard. Yeah. I love it.
What I think everybody needs is a 40-foot wall, thick concrete from sea to shining sea, protecting their home. And maybe some auto defense turrets.
Yes.
Maybe a moat.
Specifically, maybe.
Moat with alligators.
The southern part of the country. Cool.
Remember when they claimed Trump wanted a moat with alligators on the border?
Like, that's amazing.
Like, also, sure. About? Like, cool.
Let's do it.
You got to get crocodiles, though.
I don't know what it is. Like, crocodiles
Crocs
or whatever.
Crocs are a little nasty.
All right. Joseph McFarland says, Federal Reserve notes are already one-tenth of a U.S. note. Taken back at only 900% of face value. Restore a constitutional currency. Deflate by 10% of true original value. Freeze market prices for 6 months. I don't know if it's possible.
Freezing the market's pretty communist, but I don't know. We're in desperate times right now.
All right. Woot Do For You says, I decided to join Reddit to combat the mind virus. My lord, it's way worse than I imagined. And here I thought FB and Twitter were bad. I believe that Reddit is bots. Do you know about dead internet theory?
No.
The idea is that sometime around Donald Trump's election, multiple agencies, internet companies realized, like, hey, letting people have free speech on these platforms is really bad for global infrastructure. So now the internet is overwhelmingly just bots simulating public opinion.
I believe that. I mean, from my own experience, I believe that.
Yeah. And most people are banned. A handful of influential people are allowed to post. Everyone else, robots.
Wow.
Robots. Yep.
Wasn't this a huge part of the Twitter deal with Elon Musk? They couldn't say how many bots they had?
Yeah. Well, they claim they did, and then he says they didn't, so... Bear in Mind says the IRS has a $600,000 bounty on anyone that can crack the crypto XMR, aka Monero. It's an amazing endorsement. Is that true?
That's
$600,000? I don't think that's enough money, to be honest. Like, they'd have to offer way more to crack the encryption on a cryptocurrency. To be, you know, that's a crazy undertaking.
Yeah, $625,000 reward for cracking Monero. This is according to cryptocurrency365.com. Oh,
wow. I just don't see that being possible. Well, I don't know. Maybe quantum computing can unravel it.
Up to $625,000. What does that mean?
It means $1. Like, oh, congratulations. You destroyed this network.
Monero's doing a big upgrade the next couple of weeks, I've heard.
Oh, good for them. All right. Seth Hauser says, did you not vote for Biden and the Democrats in 2020?
I did.
You did?
I did.
What was your reasoning then when you voted for Biden, especially considering everything you've said now?
Well, I told you my strong feelings about how President Trump talked about sexual assault. But that wasn't even the main thing, though personally it was a hurdle I couldn't overcome. The main thing also was the climate and the environment. I thought that the Biden administration would be real liberals. I thought they would protect the environment. I thought they would ensure, you know, some rights of women to reproductive access, which I do believe in the first trimester. I thought that they would protect our core institutions, and I did not realize, and my husband told me, right, because he knows China, he was in military intelligence for 12 years, and he's like, you guys are going to open the door to a massive subversion of this country by your enemies. And I was like, this is crazy. And he was 100% correct.
Would you vote for Trump in 2024?
I'm supposed to stay nonpartisan, so I can't answer that. Oh, I will say that I would never, I'm no longer a registered Democrat. I'm an independent. Mm. I think the Democrats have like 100 years of cleaning up and apologizing and breastfeeding and internal cleansing to do. And they need to be investigated for FARA conflicts because they're taking money from our enemies at an intense scale. But I do think a dream team, if I can say this in a nonpartisan way, is actually DeSantis and Kristi Noem.
Noem? Yeah. I think she's great too. She's interesting. I'm a big fan of DeSantis.
So good.
Yeah, he's amazing. You know, we'll see. We'll see. There's a little bit of back and forth. Trump firing everybody is really appealing to me. The schedule F stuff he's trying to do. But Ron DeSantis just removed that woke prosecutor. So he's showing a willingness to do it as well. We'll see.
He's a courageous guy.
Yeah.
And she's amazing. She did not shut down. She didn't shut down. And when I was in South Dakota, and he did briefly, so she's really the bravest of all governors. Mm-hmm. When I was
they
in South Dakota,
They had a parade for her.
Oh, cool.
Like people were like, good governor.
Yeah, yeah. When I was there, it felt like America used to feel.
Yeah.
Wow.
People were not traumatized.
She's so extremely patriotic that I think it would be amazing to see her on a national stage. I can't speak to all of her policies, but I do think that she captures a nostalgic spirit of American politics that we just don't have anymore.
Right on. All right, everybody. If you haven't already, would you kindly smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends, and head over to timcast.com. We're going to have a members-only, uncensored show for you coming up at 11 p.m. This one's going to be really good and really crazy. Government intervention and censorship stuff, like seriously dark stuff. So check that out at timcast.com. You can follow us at timcastirl. You can follow me personally at timcast. Naomi, do you want to shout anything out?
To follow me?
Yeah, follow you or read your book. Or
please. Well, I'm so thoroughly censored and deplatformed that please go to allseasonspress.com and buy my book, The Bodies of Others, The New Authoritarians, COVID-19, and The War Against the Human. There's the cover. And read it and share it with your friends if you're moved by it. And also, as I mentioned, dailyclout.io, where you can send any state or federal bill through social media. And you can also, we've got a Facebook competitor called Campaigns that is surveillance-free and censorship-free.
Cool, right on. Yeah.
I'm Hannah Claire Brimlow. You can follow me at Instagram at hannahclaire.b. You can also check me out on this super cool news site. You guys may probably haven't heard of it. It's called timcast.com. Click on the read tab. You can see articles from me, Adrian Norman, Cassandra Fairbanks, a ton of cool people. I highly recommend you check it every single day.
Just follow me at iancrossland.net. Get through to any social media I got if you want to get in touch through that. Naomi, great to see you. And I want to put your mind at ease about the climate, if I can. We are entering an era where we'll be pulling the carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, converting it into graphene through like some sort of catalyst, like a magnesium catalyst or palladium, gold, copper, something like that. And methane as well. We'll convert the methane into carbon dioxide and then into graphene, which is this building material. I'm not sure if you're too familiar with it, but I would recommend.
He's obsessed.
Studying.
Wow. He's totally obsessed.
Yeah, it's going to
revolutionize. This is a relief to hear, Ian.
Yeah, they can pull it right out of the smokestack. It'll encourage pulling more coal out of the ground, hitting it with lasers to turn it into a cleaner burn, then recapturing the carbon and reusing it. I think it'll bring a lot of people together, the industrialists and the eco,
cool.
The eco fanatics like myself.
I hope so.
Catch you later. All right. Bye, everyone.
Yeah, if you like more of Graphene's ideas, you can follow him, me, and Hannah Claire Brimelow over on Pop Culture Crisis, which is every weekday from about 3 to about 5 p.m., depending on what we get into. Mary's out of town next week, so it's going to be really interesting. We're going to shake it up with some new co-hosts and have some fun over there. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Minds.com at SourPatchLids, as well as SourPatchLids.me.
We will see you all over at TimCast.com. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.